It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I'm trying, y'all. We now return you to your regularly scheduled baritone bass. But I'm working. I'm working on it. And some people have noticed, and I thank you for the very kind words. That was very sweet of you. You know who you are. Here we are, the 18th day of January, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where you'd go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, madcap, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Early arrivers there right now will be immediately greeted by Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, still has not seen fit for a while to fold space to become man cave. Yes, hi, I'm Robin, and we begin a momentous week of broadcasting here. Count on us to have. Most likely, with Sparky's consent, a front porch for the inauguration on Wednesday, an inauguration front porch. And this, right here, right now, is the last Moran Monday of the Trump era. Let not the name of Trump be spoken in the land of Egypt. Okay? Yeah. So, should be an interesting week. Should be a happy week, assuming that, you know, we don't, the maggots don't get up to their nastiness. You know. But it looks like D.C. is locked down right tight, so maybe they'll manage them. And being as this is the last Moran Monday of the Trump era, well, we've got some entirely appropriate content for it. And you'll see what I mean here in a moment or two. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out. Haley, first and foremost, earlier today. Thank you, Haley. And thanks to our 18th day of the month subscribers. Thank you to Stephen. And thank you to our friend, our anonymous friend overseas. And thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Grace. Thank you to Joy. And let's see here. Going back through the weekend, thank you to our buddy Gary, labor man. And thank you to Brock. Thank you to Reinhardt on the Virginia coast. Thank you to Timothy. Thank you to Mark. Thank you all ever so kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. And big thanks going out to Dennis in Columbus. And big thanks going out to Irish Dave. So that's profound, and it sets us up for a possible little bit of fundraising free radio if we get to the end of the month in good order. Thank you very much indeed. And so... Robin, MLK Day, because it is. And that, by the way, Brother Deacon Asa points out, this may be the final Morin Monday of the Trump era, but don't you go assuming you're getting away with tomorrow as being the last Trump-tanic Tuesday, Kincaid. You still owe the community a year and a half worth of Trump-tanic Tuesdays. Dear God, the horror, the horror. Last Morin Monday of the Trump era. Billable Rick says, praise be to Allah, Ganesh, Zeus, the flying spaghetti monster. Insert your God here. Yes, yes. But back to MLK Day. It was this day 1 year ago, Joey writes, the 18th of January, 2020, that I attended the play The Lion in Winter in beautiful downtown Florence, Alabama. I just could not get over the beauty of this quaint little town on the shores of the Tennessee River and Wilson Lake. More on the trip tomorrow, but for now, January 18th of last year fell on a Saturday night, and because of a leap year, the 18th this year falls on today, a Monday. Yeah, boy. I guess Jeffrey's all rested up from the weekend. He appears very annoyed.
Yes, leap year happens because February adds an extra day every 4 years, and so each day leapfrogs one day and moves forward 2 days instead of the normal one day. As far as I'm concerned, relative to 2020, forget leapfrogging one day. We should have just leapfrogged the whole entire year. Yes, and we should have also skipped or leaped over one certain president, too.
Yeah, no arguing with Jeffrey on that one. Getting rid of Trump will be one giant leap for mankind. However, today is Martin Luther King Day, and I really wanted to go back down to Atlanta this weekend and help with the cleanup of any remaining political signs, thank a few people in person, and attend the celebration of Martin Luther King Day at Ebenezer Baptist Church right across the street from Warnock headquarters. Well, as it turns out, the only celebration by Raphael Warnock, the current pastor of Ebenezer Baptist, was going to be a virtual presentation, and that obviously made sense considering the COVID is still a constant in this country. Liz, the Cobb County coordinator for Ossoff Warnock, told me this was not a good time to be traveling, especially to a place like Atlanta, considering this is the capital of Georgia and authorities are on high alert, especially for people with out-of-state plates. Besides, Liz said, it was too hard on Charlie when you leave, as he retreats into a minor depression upon your departure. Further, that Jeffrey the giraffe is high maintenance, and I can't keep washing his clothes and serving him turkey sandwiches all day long. What? Let Jeffrey explain.
I know she's not talking about me because I don't wear clothes and I do not eat a damn thing except leaves and fruit. I may be high in a lot of ways, but I'm not high maintenance.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeffrey. You couldn't just take the high road on that one and keep quiet. Too much to wish for. Well, Liz would know about these things because my friend Liz was once well connected with Washington's political scene as she worked in the State Department during the Obama administration, and her husband is a retired colonel who nearly became a brigadier general in the Air Force. And this, of course, causes Jeffrey to have a general thought.
Turns out Liz's husband lost out to some guy named Flynn. Too bad that some flim-flam artist cost Liz's husband his general position.
No, Jeffrey, no. Michael Flynn was in the Army, not the Air Force.
I was just speaking in a general manner, not specifically.
He doesn't give up, does he? Liz was right, so my wife and I decided to have a nice weekend in the beautiful capital of Ohio, Columbus. And on the way down to Columbus, Interstate 71 was crawling with State Patrol people as we counted seven State Patrol vehicles in the 100-mile stretch from Medina down to northern Columbus. Yes, I said it right. Medina. Normally, you might see one State Patrol during the stretch of highway. Yes, Liz was definitely on top of this one because the authorities were on high alert, and rightfully so. A trip out of state would have been ill-advised on this weekend, and maybe a trip in-state wasn't such a great idea either. Having said that, my wife and I stayed at the beautiful Hilton in the Polaris District of northern Columbus, which is located by nearly every retail outlet you can imagine. I dropped my wife off at the local IKEA store Saturday afternoon, and I plan to pick her back up tonight, Monday, because I do not want to interrupt her shopping experience. You know, here comes Jeffrey, and he looks mad.
You took your wife to the Hilton and did not take me? How could you? How could you just leave me alone for the entire weekend? I don't even know you anymore. I am leaving you.
Oh, no. So, Joey says, I get a text from Liz telling me Jeffrey was sitting on her back porch playing with Charlie. Well, I guess Jeffrey did take the high road after all and managed to make his way all the way to Georgia. At least somebody got to go to Georgia this weekend. My wife and I went to visit her nephew, who manages the Filling Station restaurant in Powell, Ohio, north of Columbus. He wasn't there because, well, he wasn't there because he was attending a funeral of somebody that died from COVID. Figures. I couldn't go to Georgia primarily because Trump had radicalized his maggot base and they were a threat to many of our state capitals, and my wife and I couldn't go see her nephew because of the Don-demic, COVID-19. Our inconvenience was minuscule in comparison to people who have lost their lives, their livelihoods, and their homes, but the damage has been done. Jeffrey, all the way from Georgia.
Yes, much damage has been done, but the real damage of Donald Trump is only just beginning.
Jeffrey's correct, and to think that 34% still support this asshole. More than that, probably. This has been Joey's Journal for Monday, the 18th of January, 2021, Martin Luther King Day, with Giraffe and Charlie lighting a candle for this country down in Georgia. Yes, yes, indeed. Thank you, Joey and Giraffe. And there's a cowbell for the whole thing. This from Elbert in Rhode Island. Wait a minute. Joe Manchin wants to expel Ted Cruz from the Senate. Are we living in an alternate universe? No, I mean, sometimes it seems like not very often, but sometimes Joe Manchin does the right thing or gets something right. And this appears to be one of them. Well, he and Josh Hawley. count on blank. Jack in Shreveport says, after your hesitation and some dead air, I figured you were going back to those days when you would provide your listeners with what you described as a perfectly adequate show. Perhaps that terminology was provided by a listener. It was provided by none other than Dan Fisher, who, by the way, will be joining me in conversation here in about 49 minutes or so and is probably listening even as we speak. Yes. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. We're going to have some fun. We're going to try not to speak the name of, you know, Lee in New York said not speaking the name of him. At least him will not be speaking on the lands of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all the other lands of, yeah. Yeah, and Donald Trump has been banned from Pornhub. Yes, cowbells for Giraffe, the truth teller. For a change, I nominate Giraffe for two cowbells, not for any silly puns, but for his two profoundly true statements. As far as I'm concerned, relative to 2020, we forget leapfrogging one day. We should have just leapfrogged the entire year. And yes, and we should have also skipped or leaped over a certain president, too. Yes, Jeffrey, getting rid of Trump will be a giant leap for mankind. Yes, indeed, for both of those, hence the cowbell I awarded. So, more on Monday, right? Oh, and I meant to mention the fundraising goal for this evening is only $200 because of Haley jumping in early today. And like I said, if we keep things on going as expected, well, we may be able to have a couple of fundraising free days at the end of the month, thanks to Dennis in Columbus and thanks to our buddy Irish Dave. Thank you again. Jack says, well, I got that coincidence totally by accident. Yeah, I know. These things happen. I agree with Trump. Sorry, Robin, says Silent R. Lamar, but this time I agree with Trump. Let's give him the red carpet treatment with a 21-cannon salute, and since Trump has his own pilot, and any plane the president is in is Air Force One, and after takeoff, when the plane is over water, let the 20... Don't you say that. No. Agent Fred, it was all a joke. People trying to get me in trouble. As for Manchin and Cruz, Scott in San Diego says, quick, check his mouth for an acorn. As in, even a blind pig finds one.
Yeah.
And so, here we are. It's Moran Monday. And we got... And speaking of Ted Cruz, the other one who should be expelled from the Senate is, of course, none other than Josh Hawley. And Josh Hawley, his followers are in a snit, including but not limited to a maggot insurrectionist domestic terrorist by the name of Mark Finchem out in Arizona, whose service out there has been so odious that the newspaper, his hometown newspaper, has called for, has upbraided him in serious fashion. What Mark Finchem's all upset about is that the Lowe's hotels in Orlando, Florida, and last I checked, Josh Hawley was still a senator from Missouri. Josh Hawley was going to have him a fundraiser at the Lowe's Hotel in Orlando, Florida. But because he helped to incite a vicious un-American attack on the U.S. Capitol and an attempted insurrection, an attempted coup, suddenly Loews Hotels International decided that they did not want to be associated with the likes of, well, Josh Hawley. So they canceled him. This led Mark Fincham, and this is Moran Monday, by the way, and, you know, just as a general, you know, reminder, I mean,
you've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Like Mark Fincham, who said, Loews has permanently lost my business. And this is what makes it art. Now, remember, we're talking about a hotel chain not wanting to be associated with someone who fomented a putsch. Okay? So, Loews has permanently lost my business, says Mark Fincham. This is what Hitler and Stalin did. What's next? Camps? Ovens? Patriots, you might want to cancel Loews reservations. Like I said, this is Moran Monday. And the Loews hotel chain is L-O-E-W-S. Whereas with the beginning of his tweet, Mark Fincham said L-O-W-E apostrophe S, which changes the meaning of the tweet entirely. Loews has permanently lost my business. This is what Hitler and Stalin did at Loews. Yep, yep. 1 minute you think you're a free republic and based on the principles of democracy, and the next thing you know, Hitler and Stalin have closed down your big box retail home improvement stores. Loews. Because Moran. Free speech disappearing in conjunction with the radical left Biden administration coming in. And, of course, young Josh Hawley has pogo-sticked up onto the cross. Because now he's lost a book deal. Oh, my God. In Kansas, you know, Kansas City is the home of Hallmark cards. In Kansas City, they sent him a lovely card and asked him to send back all of their contributions. No, really. And let's see. So no book deal. Hallmark hates him. And now he's had his fundraiser in Florida canceled. Oh, dear me. Freedom is under attack. Please. And a lot of this has been organized by a Florida lawyer by the name of Dan Ufelder. U-H-F-E-L-D-E-R, maybe Ufelder. And he started the ball rolling toward getting Josh Hawley's little Clavern meeting at the Loews canceled. And was taken aback by the whole, this is what Hitler and Stalin did. What's next? Camps? Ovens? And he said, my family was killed in the Holocaust. My great-grandparents were killed in concentration camps. My cousins survived, but they're calling me a Nazi? Oh, they didn't just call him a Nazi. They called him other things, and he managed to record some of them.
Hey, this message is for Daniel. Daniel, you're a fucking piece of shit. You can play that game, cocksucker. Someone will be coming by your office this week to pay you a visit, you fucking piece of shit. Keep fucking flapping that trap of yours and trying to cancel people. We'll see what happens, buddy. You're a fucking piece of shit. You're an un-American fucking scumbag.
Well, somebody's probably getting a visit at some point in time. I don't, because your maggot generally isn't smart enough to, like, you know, go down to a corner payphone in another state to make a call like that. No, no, of course not. Well, you're going to have that, I guess. Kyle says, give him credit for knowing what apostrophes are, though, Mark Fincham. Most maggots probably think that's a book in the Bible. Yeah, second apostrophe. That was good, Kyle. And Joe Manchin showing a spine, but seriously, when he comes out with his hair on fire, that tells you this is way even worse than anyone can imagine, and we already know a lot. Oh, yeah, we do. We do. And listen, I hope you all had a happy and reflective holiday weekend and holiday today. It was kind of interesting because, as is the case, Trump and Biden both published their schedules for today. Mm-hmm. And Trump's schedule, Nitwit Nero's schedule, hasn't changed much over the last several weeks since he began his grand pout. All it says is Donald Trump will
work from early in the morning until late in the evening. He will make many calls and have many meetings.
On the other hand, Joe Biden noted that the Dr. King holiday is a national day of service. And so Joe Biden went and volunteered at the hunger relief charity Philabundance in Philadelphia. Pretty significant difference between those two. Well, I'm glad you liked it, Billable. Cowbell for you. 1 minute we have a free Republican, then the next thing you know, Hitler and Stalin are closing down big box film improvement stores. Thank you for that. So, the obvious comparison is to Achilles pouting in his tent, but Trump is no Achilles. And, well, the tent, not so much either. But I hope you all did have a moment to reflect on the life and work of Dr. King. This is the national holiday where we find out that the only thing that white people know at most, the only thing that white Republicans know about Dr. King is that he once said that a person should be judged on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And I mean, that is the only thing that white Republicans know that Dr. King ever said. You know, they missed out on the whole Vietnam War speech at the Riverside Church a year to the day before he was murdered. Yeah, missed out on that. And, of course, Precious Princess Ivanka My Daddy Trump Kushner had an MLK Day message. She got roasted to a cinder for posting that. I mean, imagine that. Because, see, the same year that Dr. King was murdered was also the year that the Fair Housing Act was passed, 1968. And so, it wasn't even 5 years, I think, after the Fair Housing Act was passed that Trump and his filthy Klansman daddy got stone cold busted by the federal government for, well, violating the Fair Housing Act by being the racist dirtbags that, well, Trumps are. Mm-hmm. Because Fred, from whom Donnie learned everything, including his vile racism, Fred didn't want any of his apartments being rented to anyone but white people. Really? You could look it up. And so it was a little bit, tone deaf when Precious Princess Ivanka My Daddy Trump Kushner sent that tweet. But no more tone deaf than it was for Melanoma, who also sent out an MLK Day tweet. and was immediately reminded that she had participated in the vile birther racism of her hubby. Mm-hmm. So, it's just who they are, and with any luck at all, we won't be hearing from them much after the next couple of days. Wait, Lee in New York says, Iwanka noted MLK Day. Let me guess, Iwanka said her kids love MLK with cookies. That's pretty awful. But the fact of the matter is, and I note this every year at this time, this is the ongoing Santa Clausization of Dr. King, who was not some pusillanimous, pablum-spewing pacifist. He was fierce, and he was full of righteous fury. But again, don't try to tell that to white Republicans. Or the self-hating George Jeffersonian Republicans who sort of provide them cover. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, Putsch. The participants of the Beer Belly Putsch are nothing if not ardent students of history. We all know that Hitler first waged war on interior decorating before he moved on to the Jews. Really, do any of these people own a book? Well, sure they do, Matt. They own the Klan and You. They own another book called Robes and Hoods Made Easy. They own the Turner Diaries. They own White Like Me, the autobiography of Timothy McVeigh. Yeah, sure. White Republicans own lots of books. On the other hand, I've gotten it wrong again. Oh, dear, dear Robin, says Steve in New York. No, that's not what the Trumpanzees. There's no difference between a gopher and a Trumpanzee. What they think about Dr. King, what they think about Dr. King, is that he was good at having really good sales for appliances and carpets and mattresses. Yes, come on down to the mattress outlet for the Dr. King Day sale. Oh, we've got big markdowns on our mattresses. I know, Steve. I know. I know. Yes, there is. Steve, I hope there's a cowbell in the offing for the Beer Belly Putsch. There is. And there it is. Congratulations, Matt. And thank you, Steve. Here's an MLK quote. January 15th. Or rather, that's the dates of his life, January 15th, 1929 to April 4th, 1968. Scott in San Diego sent this along. Human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle. The tireless exertions and passionate concern of dedicated individuals. No, I couldn't possibly have said that. The only thing Dr. King ever said was, you shouldn't judge a person. You should judge a person on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And particularly their white skin. Yes. But like I said, more and more keeps coming out about the insurrection. Oh, that's true. Okay. You're damn right, Robin. He's not Achilles. Trump is not Achilles. Well, Achilles was flawed. He had courage and he had a code of ethics, none of which Donald the John Trump does not have. Instead, we get a greedy thief who loots the country and then pouts that we don't let him steal more. No, Donald Trump is no Achilles. Wait for it. But he is a heel. Ooh, that was quality. And that's from Dave in the Blind. And thank you, Dave. Thank you for your help as well. I went to the mailbox on Saturday. Thank you. Thank you to Brandon and Fennell. Thank you so kindly. And what I was saying about what we're finding out about, well,
let's just put it this way. There's some crazy out there. And one of them is Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, who kind of did, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert. You'll recall when last we spoke was complaining that you said that I, and Representative Maloney said, actually, ma'am, I never said your name. Well, somebody's saying her name now, and that somebody is Steve Cohen, interviewed on CNN. He dropped the dime on Lori.
That's remarkable. Remarkable to hear. I want to ask you about something specific, because several of your colleagues have alleged that the rioters may have received inside help, including raising the prospect of tours conducted or with the...
Okay, bub. First of all, let's stop this riot business. They were not rioters. They were insurrectionists. They were domestic terrorists. Or are they just too white for that? I'm sorry. You know how I am about language and words, and that's... No, this was not a riot. This was a planned assault on the Capitol. Oh, and by the way, guess who helped fund it? We heard some last week about the Republican Attorneys General Association that helped fund it and publicize it. And now it turns out that because it's all tax-free, hallelujah, it turns out that the religion industry helped to fund this treason. Yeah, because of course. You know, it really does feel like we're getting very, very close to the time when we just need to end the religious tax exemption, or maybe that was a long time ago. Amy Britton and David Willman have the story at the Washington Post. A place to fund hope, how Proud Boys and other fringe groups found refuge on a Christian fundraising website. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the name of this site is givesendgo.com. And it's a Christian fundraising website and describes itself as a place to fund hope. And so, lo and behold, the Enrique Tarrio Defense Fund has scrounged up $113,000. Enrique Tarrio noting, it's not just Proud Boys that are raising money there. There's just so many people that are raising money there. And what it is it's where the dead enders and hard cases and losers and treasonous assholes go, like the Proud Boys. Some of the users claim to have been booted from other crowdfunding websites for violating terms of service agreements. 24 people have raised $247,000 at GiveSendGo. At least eight of them are Proud Boys. One of the posts was, sponsor a warrior, help buy body armor and other protection pieces for our patriots. And it goes on and on. One was seeking money for pepper spray, cab fare, and a room at a hostel, extra money for food, and so that she could go to the riot. And as Scott in San Diego points up, let's clear up this riot shit once and for all. Even weeks after the events at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, I still struggle as I try to wrap my head around what happened and why. I think back to the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago when 31 flavors of hell and violence erupted and bloodied the streets. It unfolded in real time in our living rooms, and as it did, we heard the chants of the demonstrators, "The whole world is watching." In the wake of that, an official report concluded it came about as a result of a police riot. Now, in 2021, we've seen the reverse of what happened in Chicago 53 years ago. This time the police were bear sprayed, beaten, and terrorized by a mob that was clearly egged on and incited by a sitting president. Again, the whole world was watching. I'm sure that a fact-finding panel will be created to study everything that occurred. I hope to God there's a detailed timeline of the events that's part of the eventual official report, and I hope even more that we can all learn from it so the madness we witnessed will never be repeated. Well, Scott, I think the real question as to whether the madness we witness will ever be repeated has a lot to do with whether there will be sufficient and meaningful punishment for the people who perpetrated it. And, you know, that's just the bottom line. And, by the way, another story I saw over the weekend indicated that former members of the Trump administration were instrumental in organizing the insurrection, because of course they were. Got the story right here. The Associated Press broke the story. A pro-Trump nonprofit group called Women for America First hosted the Save America rally on January 6th at the Ellipse, an oval-shaped federally owned patch of land near the White House. But an attachment to the National Park Service public gathering permit granted to the group lists more than half a dozen people in staff positions for the event who just weeks earlier had been paid thousands of dollars by Trump's 2020 reelection campaign. Others who were on site have had close ties to the White House. And now, of course, like rats fleeing a sinking ship, they have, quote, scrambled to distance themselves from the rally. I mean, Traitor Tot was there. Rudy Giuliani was there. Did you hear the story this weekend about the shakedown he was running? Allegedly having told someone that, well, you're going to need, if you want a pardon from Trump, you're going to need $2 million. I don't think that's legal. I mean, maybe I'm just being a little too squishy and liberal, but I don't think that's legal. But remember, Giuliani whipping the crowd into a maggot frenzy said, "Let's have trial by combat." Megan Powers was there. She was the Trump campaign's director of operations, and she was the ops manager for the Save America rally. Carolyn Wren, a veteran GOP fundraiser, is named as VIP advisor on an attachment to the permit that Women for America First provided to the National Park Service. And she was getting $20,000 a month from the Trump campaign for her trouble during the campaign itself. She was also national finance consultant for Trump Victory. And that was a joint operation between the RNC and the Trump campaign. But there was a lot of money. And see, this is the other part that has to be tracked down. The people who fund insurrections are as culpable as the people who participate in them. In fact, funding them is a form of participating in them. Council for National Policy is one organization, according to a story at The Guardian. CNP members were among the scheduled speakers at the rally that frothed them up real good and got them good and hot and angry. Then there's the Judicial Crisis Network. They sent robocalls telling people to march on the Capitol. And at the Guardian, Brendan O'Connor writes, investigative journalists will continue to trace and disentangle the funding networks that facilitated 6 January. The list of names will grow longer, the sum of individual and corporate contributions greater, but it already is clear that what happened at the Capitol was not just the unintended consequences of specific capitalists' ill-advised campaign donations. It was an expression of a deeper ongoing crisis of capitalism and the ruling class's sometimes contradictory attempts to manage that crisis. It all has to be sorted out. And, well, responsibility has to be assigned. So now we go back to the story of Lauren Bobblehead Boebert as reported by Representative Steve Cohen, Democrat from Tennessee.
Of your colleagues have alleged that the rioters may have received inside help, including raising the prospect of tours conducted or with the okay of fellow sitting members of Congress. This is quite a charge to make. Have you seen any hard evidence to substantiate that allegation?
Only thing that I've seen, Congressman Yarmuth refreshed my recollection yesterday. We saw Congressman Boebert taking a group of people for a tour sometime after the 3rd and before the 6th. I don't remember the day we were walking in the Cannon tunnel. We saw her and commented that who she was, and she had a large group with her. Now, whether they were people that were involved in the or not, I do not know. She was a freshman. She might have had a large number of people coming to be with her on this historic occasion and just wanting to give them the opportunity to have a tour. But it was pretty clear that her team is the team. She's not on the home team. She was with the visitors.
But do you know that any people who were in that tour led by Boebert later attended the riot? That's the question I have.
Absolutely not.
Okay. All right.
So that audio dropout was not me. That was not a blip. That was bad audio in the CNN clip. But the bottom line is, no, he doesn't. But he doesn't know that they participated in the attack on the Capitol. But that place is crawling with security cameras. It won't be hard to sort out. And then it becomes a question of what you do with Lauren Bobblehead Boebert. What's she going to do? Shoot her way out? Jesus, these people and their fucking gun fetish. My God. But, you know, there we are. Busted. Stone cold busted. And what else? Well, plenty. Let's check in down in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan, shall we? Where a senior at the University of Kentucky by the name of Grayson Courtright is dealing with the outfall from her participation in the attack on the Capitol. She's been charged with several federal crimes, and things like violent entry on Capitol grounds, knowingly entering a restricted building, theft of property under $1,000. And she outed herself all over social media, and now there's a change.org petition circulating with over 2,000 signatures on it, asking the University of Kentucky to please expel her from their august midst. And, one of the charges is that, she admits via a private message on Instagram of being inside the Capitol, and the person, turned that message over to the feds. And so she could be seen in the videos near the Senate chamber carrying a members only sign, which the police later took away from her. There's that classic common law language of larceny. She stole, took, and carried away the property of, yes. Sometimes I remember reading that statute long, long ago and thinking, that seems kind of superfluous. But no, stole, took, and carried away. That's Grayson Courtright. There's a reason for these things. But the best part of that, this is kind of like Mr. Fincham out in Arizona spelling L-O-E-W-S as L-O-W-E apostrophe S. Well, when it was pointed out to her, Grayson Courtright wrote on her Instagram account, "Infamy is just as good as fame." And then added, "Either way, I end up more known." Because this is 2021, and in the first year of the third decade of the 21st century, getting known on social media is the most important thing in the world. And Grayson's going to get more known. Well, congratulations, Grayson. We're all so happy for you. Well, some of us aren't. Because some of us are ashamed that, yes, Grayson Courtright, because of course, is from West by God, Virginia. At least she didn't go to WVU. Yay us. Infamy is just as good as fame. Mm-hmm. And she later said, I don't even know what treason is. Well, Grayson, you college senior, you, you're about to learn. Really and for true. Oh, well, you'll have that. And I mentioned the Republican Attorneys General Association a moment ago. I'm proud to say that the NAACP and some West Virginia Democrats are calling for the removal of our attorney general from office and his disbarment. Because he, well, he's a member of the return, the Republican attorney, you know, RAGA. And they helped publicize, that organization's publicity wing helped publicize the insurrection. And, of course, Morrissey used West Virginia taxpayer money to sign on to the stupid lawsuit that was brought by the already indicted potential felon, Attorney General Ken Paxson of Texas, and which was also joined in by any number of other maggot attorneys general. But at least here, the NAACP is trying to do something about it. West Virginia and NAACP State President Owens Brown said, the West Virginia NAACP contends that West Virginia State Attorney General Morrissey's action by joining in the lawsuit and trying to overturn the presidential election was intended to disenfranchise the black votes in the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. The lawsuit was a direct assault on the 15th Amendment of the United States Constitution that gave black people the right to vote. And Danielle Walker, a Democrat from Monongalia County, said, instead of working to protect the rights of West Virginians and serve our citizens, Attorney General Patrick Morrissey is using his office to support racist and un-American efforts to disenfranchise voters who didn't vote for his party's candidate. Morrissey does not represent West Virginian values, has violated his oath of office, and should be removed from office and disbarred. Delegate Mike Pushkin, another Democrat, said Attorney General Morrissey knew better than to involve West Virginia in a frivolous attempt to undermine the electoral process and disenfranchise thousands of voters. He knew this case was going nowhere, but chose to waste public funds and precious time to appeal to his base and perpetuate a lie. A lie that eventually led to violence in our nation's capital. I stand with the NAACP in their rebuke of this ridiculous and dangerous political stunt. And let me associate myself with those remarks. Because Patrick Morrissey has, from the moment he announced his candidacy, at which time, by the way, he was not a lawyer licensed to practice in the state of West Virginia, Patrick Morrissey has made no bones about the fact that he intended to be an absolute, complete, and total lickspittle for the Republican Party and for its most vicious and hateful racist elements. He started his, remember, he came here from elsewhere, as we like to say in the hills. He ain't from around here. He is, in fact, and sorry, that's on y'all, no offense, he's from New Jersey. And he was a lobbyist. He was a pharmaceutical lobbyist. He had a hand in helping to roll millions of opioid pills into the state of West Virginia. And that's who he is, and that's why I refer to him as pill pushing Patty Morrissey. He needs to be gone. But of course, we have a maggot supermajority in both houses of our legislature. So unless the state bar does something about him, God knows the legislature won't. If he had a shred of human dignity in the entire corpulent waste that is his human body, he would resign. But, like I said, if he had. Long story short, he doesn't. So you get the idea. What a mess this is going to be. But because it's Moran Monday, and we can't have a Lauren Bobblehead Boebert story without a Marjorie Taylor Greene cucumber story. Remember, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the last we saw of her, was standing up in the House during the impeachment debate last week wearing a mask that said censored while she ran her idiot yap. And among other things, she unmasked, hid during the attack on the Capitol in close proximity with other members of the House. And again, wouldn't wear a mask, but no, somehow or another, personal responsibility, which Republicans are forever blathering about, and yet somehow managed to not understand should apply to them as well. No. Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber has blasted out a tweet to Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington. She quote tweeted her and said, "I hope you fully recover from COVID-19 without any complications. Before you point fingers at me or anyone else, you need to talk directly to Speaker Pelosi about exposing all of us to COVID when she called back positive COVID House members just last week for votes for Speaker." Jesus Christ. That's not where people got the Rona. People got the Rona from being close to people like Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber. And interviewed by a local Georgia news outlet, she said that anybody who received a positive COVID-19 after the test, attack, should blame Nancy Pelosi. Healthy people do not spread COVID. COVID positive people spread COVID. Everyone was exposed all week by the COVID positive members who Nancy Pelosi brought into the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's insane to blame people who weren't wearing masks. Ah, well, Marjorie, can we call you Marge? Well, Marge, that's the thing with COVID-19. You can be infected and not have symptoms, you fucking maggot idiot. And in fact, there's data to suggest that that's the time when people spread it the most. I know. We're going to send Kyle out into the yard, eating dirt and running rabbits. I know. Kyle says, "Wait, it's Pelosi's fault that they didn't wear masks? The mental gymnastics these idiots do are actually kind of impressive. Jesus, oh, I know. She stuck the landing, didn't she?" Kyle adds, "She was censored as her live comments about being censored were shown on television. My head hurts." And from Jack in Shreveport, as to Grayson Courtright, "Bless her heart." And that's not the good bless her heart either. No, it isn't. Barbara with an observation. "Seems like Giuliani has larceny in his DNA. He claims several members of his family had ties to the mob, and his father fired a gun at a man during a Brooklyn shootout." It's also claimed that the Law and Order mayor himself once slugged a guy who ogled his date. The book Rudy, an investigative biography of Rudolph Giuliani, was written by Village Voice reporter Wayne Barrett, and portions of it were printed in this week's Voice. Those excerpts, released today, said Giuliani's father, Harold, pleaded guilty and served 18 months in prison for holding up a milkman at gunpoint in the 1930s, a decade before his son was born. Yeah. Sparky sent this along. Breaking news on the Trump pardons. 100 pardons are expected in the next day or so. But according to several outlets, people inside the White House are saying that Trump will not pardon himself or his family. And part of that reason is said to be that members of his staff are saying, no, please, don't do that, sir.
You know, they come to me and they say, sir, please don't pardon yourself. You're so great. No one would ever dare torture you with the hoax once you're gone.
No, what it is that he has members of his staff who rightly think that it would be a stupid thing for him to pardon himself, because then everybody would march into the Senate trial of the impeachment and just convict his ass and have done with it. And then move on to the second part of the bifurcated proceedings, where they declare that he can never hold a position of public trust or profit ever again, and order that his name be stricken from all public buildings, public documents, and that his name never be spoken again in the land of Egypt. Yeah, okay, I added that last part. This from Billable Rick. The death of Phil Spector from COVID-19, 81 years old. I knew that Phil Spector died this weekend, although I just learned that the likely cause of death was from COVID-19. I wouldn't be at all surprised if weird, psychotic Phil was a cucumber. Nor would I. He was brilliant in his time, but he was also a horrible, 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 very bad, no good human being. And, Kyle pointing out, oh, fuck, this is going to be quite the send-off to the shit show. Oh, it is. It is. Remember, he wants a lot of people in D.C. for a big send-off. I don't know how they're going to get through the lockdown, but, well, stranger things have happened, haven't they? And then they'll probably turn around and, have some more riot. And Brother Deacon Asa with a note for Billable Rick. Stalin won't be closing any big box home improvement stores, Billable, because he's too busy serving Doner kebabs at his namesake restaurant in Moscow. That's true. A Russian restaurant, a Russian Doner, which is kind of like, kebabs and gyro and what. A Doner restaurant has opened in Moscow called Stalin, and it's apparently creating a bit of a kerfuffle over there. MAGA Sense, this from Kim. Why, sure, Lady G blames Speaker Pelosi, too, for not having security in the Capitol insurrection. So the fact that Marjorie Taylor Green Cucumber would blame Pelosi for this, too. Good fucking riddance to 2020. Amen. Hear, hear. Absolutely. And so we're right on top of the end of the Philip Robster, and we'll be joined momentarily, one hopes, by our buddy Dan, who can just ring in any time if he is so inclined. And I'll mention that we've got $200 to raise this evening. And if some portion of that happened in the next 2 hours, that would be wonderful. Or for people listening afterward, that too. So we have that. Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you. Barbara says that article in the Village Voice was from the year 2000. So, yeah, I don't think there's a Village Voice anymore, is there? Right. Thank you, Barbara. This is some serious shade, Steve in New York says. An article in the New York Times about melanoma. The real shade is in the final two paragraphs. It is customary for incoming and outgoing first ladies to meet for a tour of the White House, but on Monday, a person familiar with Dr. Biden's thinking said that since Mr. Trump had still not conceded to President-elect Joseph R. Biden Jr., it would not make sense for the two to meet. That person added that Dr. Biden knew her way around the White House anyway. Wow. Damn. You're right, Steve. That's going to leave a mark. Exactly. Flavio says super spreader event or, you know, big send off. One last super spreader event. Precisely. And Flavio added earlier. Funny. A, how many conspiracy theorists does it take to change a light bulb? B, do your own research. Yeah. Yeah. So let's all right, we've got a lot of this ground covered in a relatively short period of time. And so that means we can have some fun now because Dan's here. Hey Dan.
Hold on. Vamp for a few minutes. I'm trying to get some things.
Oh, okay. I got more. Don't worry.
Here I am.
Oh, you're there?
I had two. Yeah. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. Yeah. No, I had two Robin Kincaids in my ear because of audio things. So it was driving me crazy.
Yeah.
You don't drive me crazy, but.
But that kind of will.
So, what's new?
Not much. You?
Well, the last time I was on the show was the Bob Kincaid show.
It was. It was head on with Bob Kincaid. Yes, it was.
It was head on with Bob Kincaid.
And then New Year's Eve happened.
And, yes.
And so,
yes, indeed.
Yeah. And so here we are, and I'm, you know, things are just progressing along and learning a lot of things and worrying about medications and whether things work and when they're going to work and if they're going to work. And apparently,
you know, you and I, what you're saying pretty much describes often my days too.
come to think of it, I can see where that would be the case.
Yeah. Not all the parts work the way they used to, you know, medications are a thing.
And human metabolisms are a different thing. And
my makeup expenses probably aren't quite the same as yours these days.
No, nor are your makeup mistakes. You know, I've always had a little tremble in my hand ever since I was a child, and uh-huh. So I have to. I go to do my makeup, and I have to be really, really careful, or I'll wind up playing tic tac toe in my eyelids.
Well, it's like that scene in Airplane, right? When they're experiencing turbulence and the woman is trying to put on her lipstick and she just winds up making like zigzags across her face. You remember that?
Yes. Remember it. I live it.
But you feeling all right? You know, how aside from the more obvious physical stuff with you, how are the teeth? How's the effort in raising money to get the teeth worked on.
I want these things out of here really badly. Unfortunately, the campaign has sort of stalled.
It does that. It does that with GoFundMes. Maybe tonight, you know, I can sort of give a little kick in the pants to some of your listeners who I'm sure have already donated perhaps something already. But maybe, you know, you can donate more than once to GoFundMe. I'm a proud and very grateful GoFundMe recipient myself. After the heart transplant two point something years ago. And I can tell you folks, and I can tell you, Robin, that it's a very, very meaningful thing.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked by the success that this thing has had, Dan. I mean, we're right at about 40% of the way. So, if we can get to 10, we'll be half.
Right.
And at that point, I think I'll feel comfortable in going and, you know, scheduling and, you know, get the first part done because
and,
it's a, you know, the whole
thing. You and I had talked about this.
Yeah, this is a year-long process. I mean, you want to talk about things that'll get, because, you know, we've had conversations about other things that sound kind of terrifying that I'm going to be dealing with later. Maybe, I don't know. This, you know, having screws countersunk into your jawbone. Wow.
Mm. It makes me cringe just hearing you say that.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that cringes.
Yeah.
So that's a, you know, that's a year long process. The first part is just the oral surgery to get them out, then the heal up, and then the prosthetics, and then you got to do the prosthetics again, and oh God. And then somewhere around this time next year, maybe it'll all be done and it will be wonderful. But I'm scared to death that I'm going to sound like Sylvester the cat, for a year. And that's terrifying. But then again, it's a chance to work on my voice tone too. So I'll sound like Sylvester the cat crossed with, you know, Minnie fucking Mouse, or not.
Well, after all these years of broadcasting, you know, maybe it's time for a little mix up, a little change up in the, the little usual, a little spice into the stew, let's say. And that certainly would do it. A little change in voice, a little change in sibilance.
Sibilance,
the soothsayer. But, you know, here's the thing, too, then, maybe for the listeners out there, and I know that there are many who are honest to God, could be described as the faithful. This is what I'm going to do tomorrow, is I'm going to repost on my Facebook page the original GoFundMe. The original GoFundMe. I hate to use the word plea. Because you're not pleading. You have more dignity than that. But I'm gonna repost that. And I would like anybody who's listening who does have a Facebook page to go ahead and put it on yours as well. You know, that's free. That costs absolutely nothing. Just a few clicks. And you never know where that goes. You know, it's like the old shampoo commercial of, you know, I told two friends and they tell two friends. It works for COVID, that principle as well, of course. But, you know,
yes,
if we can just sort of keep Robin in the conversation, and the fact that these teeth are not going to fix themselves and they're not going to pay for themselves. You know, I want you, Robin, to be happy in all ways, you know, with your body in all ways. You know, we all share teeth. You know, we don't all share the same sex organs. We might not choose to change what our sex organs are, but we all want to have teeth and we all want to chew things, because chewing's a very nice thing to do, I would say.
And you're decidedly pro teeth. Absolutely. Me too.
Yeah. Chewing. I love it.
You mentioned you were going to put, well, if people go to it, who went to it when it first went live,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't look the same. It has been updated to reflect my new reality.
Uh-huh. That is true. Things have changed since then. So definitely it deserves a re-upping, a second time around. And I pledge personally to do that tomorrow. You know, I've never been shy of flaunting publicity or, you know, asking my friends for favors. And I do have on Facebook, you know, I got some folks on there.
You do.
And a lot of them very nice folks. So,
who love you very much.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we've chatted about us, our teeth, and
that's enough.
Things.
Yes, that's enough about us. Now, how about y'all, right?
Kind of. How about us in a more national sense? You know, I did listen to the show tonight. I confess, as I always do, I don't listen to the show every night. You know,
I'm pretty much the only one who does that.
I don't know.
Some people get very close.
I admire. I'm mesmerized by the people who can do 3 hours of live. Anybody 3 hours, you know, five times a week. That's, you know, you're fascinating and you're always an excellent listen. But I would want 15 hours of you in my week if I just didn't have other things like a job and, you know, family and
really life,
things to watch on TV, and sleep.
No, but it, all kidding aside, it's one of the most humbling aspects of doing this, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Is to know that people actually get joy, and they get. Not always joy. Sometimes they get infuriated, but we get whatever we get that way together. And it's a sense of community. And for me, it is humbling. I mean, it is truly humbling. I've never had the requisite ego really for some of this, because never in a million years would I do that shameful, shitty stuff that Limbaugh, for instance, you know, with half my brain tied behind my back, my friends, or with talent on loan from God, because I would, I'd be, you know, sidestepping every other step, just going to piss him off, and you know, one of the, and then the E just comes down, it's like zap. You know. But then again, maybe that's what Rush is going through right now, because at this point in time, all those years of him saying with talent on loan from God. I've always yelled, margin call! And that may be what's happening now as he gets to watch his God Emperor take his final ride out of D.C. and knows that he'll be taking his final ride in the not-too-distant future as well.
Yeah, we do know that there will be still more riding to come from both Mr. Limbaugh and Mr.'s he who shall not be named. There will still be riding, but you know, it's going to be different. You know, it's going to be good to not necessarily wake up every day and immediately go to AP or CNN. It's like, what the fuck did he say, or what the fuck did he do now? You know, and it's just about good old boring Joe Biden doing regular boring presidential things that, you know, have real impact on how we live and.
But by the same token,
we breathe, Dan, and the water we drink.
You know, I am
the sexes we choose to be.
I am Robin Kincaid, the little ray of sunshine. And I got to thinking about this over the weekend, and I was talking with my lovely spouse about it. And you know, Biden has said that it's being described in the news, and you know, but far and away, I'm not gainsaying nor poo pooing it. But, you know, he says we're going to give out 100 million vaccines in the first 100 days in office. And when you first hear that, you think, well, that's pretty freaking awesome, considering that we've only given out like 8 million so far.
Right.
But then you think, well, if it continues at that rate, and that's a pretty serious, I mean, that's pretty gung-ho. 100 million doses in 100 days. That's a million doses a day. It can be done. But what I'm getting at is if it continues at the same heroic rate, that means we will get to an almost total vaccination rate about this time next year, which is still terrifying. Because when you factor that in, and I know you have to be paying attention to this kind of stuff, Dan, because you like everybody else, have a vested interest. It's just that yours is a little bit more,
yes,
if one can say it.
I learned pretty recently that one in three heart transplant recipients who have gotten COVID have died. I'm in a one out of three club here of that. So.
And so you're paying close attention, and the thing is, what we know now, and the story, you know, I had the story last week and found it kind of terrifying. The CEO of Moderna has said that, and other health officials as well, he's not just trying to move some vaccine. He said that this virus is going to become endemic to life on Earth. That means it's just going to come here. It's just here, and it's going to stay. Yeah. And to a certain extent, you know, somebody said, yeah, like the flu, only not like the flu, a lot more deadlier than the flu.
Yeah, and it spreads more easily. And
wait, did I just say more?
It's
they're going to take my English major card away.
It's mutated. Yeah,
I think I just said more deadlier. That's just terrible. But yeah, and so that means that about the time we finish vaccinating the country, we're going to turn around and have to revaccinate the country with whatever it's mutated to.
And it's the receding horizon line is what it sounds like.
Yeah. And so it's going to go on and on and on. So this, you know, it's great that they're talking about 100 million doses in the first 100 days. But what we really have to be talking about is how long is it going to take to get to 350 million doses or whatever that number is once you subtract like babies who are too young for it and people whose health status won't allow them to take it, and you know, that sort of thing. So I don't know what that means.
I don't either. For now, I choose to think very simply and optimistically, because if I don't, it'll I might just be like Trump and or he who shall not be named. I might just crawl up into a hole and suck my thumb and just sort of let time pass. You know, I have to believe. I really feel like I have no choice but to believe that at the very least, this administration coming in and the people occupying it, besides the president, are going to be those who put thought into things. And it's not the thought isn't simply how do we make the guy in the Oval Office happy? How do we make him not scream at us because we told him something he doesn't like? The thought hopefully will be how do we actually approach and solve a problem logistically? How can and what are the details involved? And what are the real odds? You know, I think there'll still be a certain amount of bullshit presented to the public because that's the way it always is. You know, you can't handle the truth is probably something that every politician of every stripe has either expressed in one way or another or felt. And maybe there is truth to us not always knowing how rough the odds are against us, whether in COVID or international diplomacy or the debt, any of that stuff. If we really could fathom it and understand it, we might just give up, you know. So in many ways, I'm a typical dumb American in that I choose to still just look at the 100 million would be awesome, you know, especially compared to 8 million. Or, you know, I think that, you know, the previous administration
said. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
I'm not getting you wrong. I know what you're saying. I mean, it's the same with, you know, with what's coming up at the inauguration this week and the whole thing of you know, I posted something the other day on Facebook where I was saying, like, you know, God willing, if we're lucky, it's going to be basically I said it's going to be a good day, you know, and somebody kind of read it in my thing the wrong way. It was thinking that I was like, well, you know, everything's happy and joy now. And it's like, well, no, I know that, you know, this is a ship that's going to take a long time to turn around. It doesn't just swing out 180 degrees automatically, you know, and there will be disappointments in the next administration. There will be things that were promised that won't come to light. But in terms of the inauguration, you know, I know all this. And foremost, I know that the danger is still out there. And those who were responsible for the six, and I'm not just talking about the yahoos and beer bellies, I'm talking about the Congress people. I'm talking about police officers and National Guards people. I think it was a huge conspiracy, and I think that those people will continue to conspire. Basically, whoever is in that Oval Office, even if it's a Republican, I think there's a group of people who now feel like this will be their country to claim, and whether that's you know, this year or the years to follow or a lifetime. I think the armed insurgency is something that is not going away with an election of any president. And that's my see, Mr. Happy Sunshine just brought the whole room down right here.
Well, reality spoken here.
Yeah,
but even before January 6th, I was saying that what is coming is the work not of a presidential term or two presidential terms, but is the work of a generation. I mean, this is what it's going to take to make things right is going to be monumental. Labors of Hercules kind of heroic stuff, because we've got to figure out a way to, as for instance, my dear friend Dr. Bill would note, we've got to figure out a way to teach more people about how this government works, so that they can't be seduced by goony theories like QAnon.
Well, you know, we are taught that. Most of us, I believe, in this country are taught some version of the basics of how it works when we're very young, right? You know, whether it's in fourth grade or seventh grade or through Schoolhouse Rock, you know, I'm just a bill, I'm only a bill. Whatever it is, we do learn of the idea that it's a separation of powers, and we are told at least what the what the basic jobs are of each of those branches of government, and the fact that the Congress is separated into two.
Well, our Dan, our generation was, but what happens, and it's part of the deconstruction of America and the dumbing down of America, that was a deliberate act of the Republican Party, going back to about January 20th, 1981. We stopped teaching civics. I had it was almost an afterthought. I had it in ninth grade, the summer school before ninth grade year. I two courses. That was Alabama history and then civics. And
so you're saying that social studies and or civics, or however you want to call it, that's not being taught in some basic form in most schools? That's surprising to me.
I've heard from a lot of people saying, you know, that no. Or that what happens is because we've got, you know, we've got, and I know your kids probably lived through it, the teach the test business with the standard, with the standardized testing. And so what happens is, I mean, for instance, you probably participated when you were a kid growing up here. Remember the social studies fair? West Virginia is one of the few states.
We didn't have a social studies fair. We had math carnival or something like that and some other thing.
Well, West Virginia is one of the few states that has a social studies fair. And the thing is, though, social studies gets wrapped, everything that isn't STEM gets wrapped into social studies. So history is social studies, civics is social studies, anthropology, psychology, it's all social studies.
And it's often taught by either a football or a basketball coach. Am I right?
It happens.
Mine was eighth grade social studies. I'm thinking about it now. That was Coach Pork Smith, the junior high school football coach, and Coach Stender, football coach, Tyler County, was my high school social studies. Yeah, it's all football coaches. So you're getting the football coach version of American history. I mean, I guess I'm lucky to know what I know. I mean, they weren't.
And God,
neither,
you know,
one
and,
of those
and,
men
and,
were dummies.
No, but God forbid if your social studies teacher is a maggot.
Right, which happens now. We know this. Or that the approved curriculum has a decided bent, because of course, you know, higher education in general or advanced education is now, you know, condemned as a liberal plot against American youth. We know this to be true. But, you know, it's funny how, you know, we have more media than we've ever had. We have more communication happening between individual parties and groups of parties than we've ever had in history. And it's only going to continue to grow and grow as we kind of find new platforms and new means of communicating with one another. But what about knowledge itself? And it's like you and I've discussed many times on this show. It's knowledge, the pursuit of knowledge, and this includes not only schools, but it also includes, for instance, what is considered news on television or online. It's become choose your own adventure. You know, it's become choose your own truth. And I'm not just saying that, you know, for Fox and the obvious bad guys. Is that AOM? I always get those confused. Or OAM? What is that? America's Own Network? Is that what they call it?
I call it ONAN, the network, ONAN, the network, that spills its news upon the ground.
Yeah, but look at too, even CNN, it does slant its way toward those of us who think like us. And you know, certainly HuffPost and things like that. We'll give you the stories they think you want to read, because you want to read those things. You want to hear criticisms of certain president. Or if you're on the other side of it, you want to hear praises of that president or the leaders. So it is all choose your own adventure now, information. And from information, supposedly, knowledge. And I know this happens with schools, too, especially if they're private schools, which the former Secretary of Education has pushed up the wazoo. Private schools can teach whatever they want to teach. So if they want to say that, you know, QAnon is true and there really is a pizza store basement where all this, it can be put into books with that children can absorb and accept as truth.
Right.
You know,
and there's
the same way that.
And that goes hand in glove with teach the controversy, which is another noxious.
Yeah. But listen, even you and I, back in the virtuous days of our educations, you know, we were told in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. We all thought we were all in the plays with the, you know, the pilgrims and the grateful Indians receiving gifts and sitting down to eat a big dinner together. And there wasn't anything about smallpox and blankets or, you know, the fact that we took all their land and gave them nothing for it except death. You know, there was none of that. And even, you know, Dances with Wolves wins Best Picture in 1990. And lovely to look at movie and fun. But, you know, on the other hand, it's the white savior. And it's this whole thing of two of just, you know, that why can't we all get along? And yeah, I mean, it brings about the stuff of genocide and so forth. But it seems to offer an answer which wasn't accomplishable then and is not now. So we all love a certain amount of our own version of truth. And from that, what we come to accept as knowledge. I'm crawling down a rabbit hole here. You're supposed to pull me out at some point.
Oh, okay.
You quote some Greek or something.
Galli eis dominus divisa in partes tres. There's a little Latin. Flavio says, tell Dan civics is not taught anymore in middle or high school. It's all subsumed under social studies and taught by a coach. Exactly. And it's been that way since the 1980s. Civics is usually taught by somebody with a BFSS license. That's broad field social studies, a hodgepodge. And it's usually taught by a maggot coach.
Yeah, I don't know if either of my former teachers slash not really my coaches, because I was not an athlete. I don't know if they're maggots or not. I wouldn't surprise me if they were, given where they lived. And you know, we find athletes, you know, those hardcore, or, you know, everybody, you know, what is it? Nobody gets a participation trophy type guys. They tend to slant into the red spectrum of things.
Yeah,
it's quite possible.
Yeah, without a doubt. And by the way, you were talking about not listening every day. I got a note from Tom in sunny San Rafael. Very close to every day. I think I've missed less than 15 programs since the very first week you were on the air. Mostly on podcast, recently more live, but I'm there. And that's awesome. Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
You know, there ought to be, it's a shame there's not some way to have like a punch card system so that like after, I don't know, X number of listens, you get a free donut or a sandwich or something. Because that'd be awesome.
Well, we got the cowbell. You know, like, you get a cowbell for something like what?
You get a cowbell. It's like a gold stick, an audio gold sticker. You know,
right.
You can't eat it. You can't cash it in for a boat or anything. But it's a cowbell. It makes people happy. People love cowbell.
And Jimmy points out, in line with what you said a moment ago, about confirmation bias and seeking things that make us feel more secure in our beliefs. Jimmy says,
yeah.
If you're getting news from your monitor, you're just getting updates, and they're not updating all the news.
Yeah. No, you got, if you want to dig deep, you can, there are places you can dig. You know, it takes time. It takes the willingness to, you know, and some have more time and some are more willing than others. Some are just able to absorb things, you know, better than others. You know, some of us can read large sections of things without our eyes, you know, starting to slowly sink through our cheeks, and some of us can't.
So let me ask you on another front. You mentioned having gone back to work. How is that in the age of COVID?
Well, it's interesting you ask that because I started a new job, in fact, a pilot for CBS. And in general, I mean, I think that our industry is really one of the leaders, if perhaps the leader, in terms of adhering to COVID safety guidelines. Because our industry has a shitload of money behind it. And that's really what it takes. Here's what are some of the established protocols for those of us who do what I do. First of all, everybody involved in a production has to get a COVID test both before starting work. You have a pre-workday COVID test. And once you pass, you're allowed to work. But then once a week minimum, we are tested. Those of us who work offset or do not work next to the camera do a once a week COVID screening. And even when I was working at home on the last job, I rarely ventured anywhere from the house. But as long as I had a computer and a phone, I was able to do my job on that. I would go out and do my COVID test once a week because it was available. For me, it was free. And yeah, the odds of me getting COVID are pretty slim if I'm hardly ever leaving the room. But I want to know, you know, and if I do have it, I want to be the first to know it. And so, but this is the case with all of us. It's a requirement. We have to get COVID tested. And those who work with actors, who work with literally next to the camera, behind the monitor, or, you know, have to speak to the actors.
Costumers, makeup.
Have to take off their masks.
Yeah.
When the time comes to shoot a scene, they have to take those masks off. So they're extremely vulnerable. So those of us who do work in that proximity have to get tested 3 times a week. And again, that's all being paid for by the production companies, and it's all on company time, and that's how it has to be. And masks are 100% required at all times, no matter where you are. You can go out to take like an oxygen break if you leave the set, you leave the stage, and you're not surrounded, you know, if you've got the distance and all that stuff. But in general, people are getting used to the idea of we're at work, we wear the mask. And, you know, early on when we came back, the industry started up again around late August. We were shut down between March and mid to late August. And when we came back, there were a few mask holes, a few MAGAs in our industry that thought they would put on a tough guy front and either not wear a mask or pull it down and laugh about that or just wear the bandanas. And a number of those people were told to go home. You're done. And were sent home and fired. And our union, Local 52, thank God, has stood by the productions on that, saying we agree with them. That is absolute cause for instant termination. And, you know, I'm sure that you've probably discussed on your show the Tom Cruise rant and all that thing. And there's opinions about, you know, did he go too far? Was he doing it for publicity? But the fact was he was sending a vital message. And you may not agree with the tone. I don't mind it. I listened to the thing and I don't mind the tone he took. I don't mind the language he took, because some people, the only way you're going to get through their thick skulls is to just scream it loud and clear with lots of curse words and words like death and dying. And you're going to shut down our industry, all of which are true. So, you know, and somebody like Tom Cruise has clout that I, Dan Fisher, do not have.
Yeah.
You know, he was a producer on that movie. So he could say, you're out of here. And he has the right to do that. He can fire people. You know, I can just go, come on, guys, put on the mask. What? Come on. You know, so anyway, we also have COVID teams now on every production has to have a staff whose entire job is to make sure the guidance, the standards are complied with, make sure everything is clean. We have cleaning crews coming in when a crew has used a set. At the end of the day, a crew comes in and cleans that set and disinfects and wipes down everything that the actors touched. Prop people have to do that too. There's a whole lot of changes to the way prop people have to do things in terms of scenes with drinks and food and things that go in somebody's mouth or something like that. It's a lot of work.
Oh God, it would be mind boggling from a prop standpoint. Costumes, like I said earlier,
yeah,
you know, makeup,
you know, sound, yeah, the sound department, you know, we for years now the most efficient means of recording sound is to attach lavaliers, you know, body mics to the actors. But that means you're standing, you know, right in front of their faces a lot of times, or you're certainly within that 6 foot distance. So you know, those people all have to be tested 3 times a week.
So is most of the work you're doing, are they interiors, soundstage, or y'all shooting location stuff or what?
Well, it's hard to do locations right now. It depends what the story is and what the location is, because, for instance, there's been a huge surge of shooting in New Jersey because it's very difficult, if near impossible, to shoot on the streets of New York City. Because for one thing, it's hard to control crowds, even in the best of times, and let alone these times. And also, producers and directors don't want to date the material. They don't want to see anybody walking around in the deep background wearing a mask on their face. because, you know, 3 years from now when this thing gets syndicated or whatever, that dates the material. And nobody wants that, you know, unless a show or a movie is specifically in a certain period. It's sort of desired to be anytime USA, you know, it could take place at any time. So it happened that the show that I had been working on prior to Christmas, prior when you were still Bob, I was finishing up a show that I'd done for Apple. It was a science fiction show, and it was almost all on stages. So, but even then, there's social distancing to definitely enforce. Our COVID team people had a stick, a 6-foot-long stick with tennis balls on each end, and if people were hanging out together, they would sometimes go up and bring out the stick and say, "You got to back up," you know, and I think. I can't say that all of us have complied and all of us are on the best behavior. I think most of us are, because most of us don't want to shut down for another 5 months. That's hard, you know. Thank goodness for whatever, you know, extra unemployment or extra federal benefits we did get. Every little bit helps. Helene and I got through it, you know, through a lot of planning and a lot of, you know, sacrifice and so forth. And it's still not over. I mean, I'm talking about it as if it's over, and God knows it isn't. For now, we're still filming things. I'm on a show now where I'm actually going into an office, at least part time. I went a couple of days last week. I'll probably go in a couple of days this week. I work from home today. But when I do go into the office, my comrades, it's a huge warehouse space I'm in, and my comrades, the set dressers, made a tent. With it inside the space, and they put up clear plastic walls bordering around the tent. So I am really, they literally now call me Bubble Boy at work, because I am in the bubble. And before you come into the bubble, you can't even really come into the bubble. No one should be in there except me. But at least if you're going to come up and give me a piece of paper or ask me a question, you got to let me know, and so I can turn around and come up and talk to you or take the thing. So we're all being super protective still. I do have a photo. Somebody put a photo up of George Costanza fighting the Bubble Boy from the Seinfeld episode with the caption "Moops, moops" at the bottom. Do you know that one?
Oh yes.
Yes. Okay. For a minute, I was like, I had to ask you a question to make sure that you were still there. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm just listening. I mean, it's actually part of the new me, trying to learn to listen better.
There you go. Well, you were good. You were good before that too. The old you was just fine. But so I'm trying it for now. And if I feel creeped out, or if I feel, you know, I do have a very strong sense and very strong limits on what I'm willing to accept and not accept. For now, I'm willing to come in at least a couple of times a week, because it does help. It does makes me do the job better if I'm putting my eyes on things that I'm setting up to go in and out of.
Because you've got a better you've got a better handle on the universe of your work.
Yeah, and if the people I'm working with have a sudden impulsive question, I'm right there. Doesn't take a phone call or a text or, oh shit, I'll just do it myself anyway or whatever. There's the communication is definitely, I'm sure, better.
So can I ask this? And of course I don't want you to spill any beans that aren't supposed to be spilled or anything. Is this period work or is this modern or?
No, it's contemporary. I don't know what I'm allowed or not allowed to say, so I'll say nothing. It is a pilot for a show for CBS, okay. That, and we're filming mostly in New Jersey. That's about all. All I should say.
Okay, can I
to honor my bosses?
Just because Agnes and I have been looking for things to watch. The other the other night we watched the first episode of WandaVision, and
how was that?
I freely confess I have no idea what's going on, but it's Marvel, and there's got to be something sinister in the background. It's black and white. And Wanda the Witch, you know, all comic book characters, is in this total June Cleaver, Leave It to Beaver, get up.
I saw the trailers and stuff.
Right. And it's like, something funny going on here. And the thing is, they've only released the first three episodes. And I heard it being reviewed, I think, by David Biancooley on NPR. Uh-huh. And he said, I'd love to tell you what it's about, but I don't know what it's about. Because he said, I watched those first three episodes, and the rest of it just rolls out week by week by week. And he said, so we watched the first one, and I was like, well, he wasn't lying. It's interesting, but there's just something sort of unsettled about it, if that makes sense. But the other thing I was going to mention is we've been catching up with, oh my God, I can't believe it, Outlander. Which is very much a period piece, and it's just...
And my wife loves that show.
I keep, we'll watch another episode, and I look at Agnes, and I go, where are the indigenous people?
Right.
Is this a...
It's a very white show, is my understanding.
It's blindingly white, and it's so it's so white that it's so Anglo-Scots, but if you're watching it, and you have any knowledge of history, and this is all taking place in North Carolina anyway, you're like, I'm pretty darn sure that this was not some... Because what they're doing is they're perpetuating the ancient racist myth of the vast and empty wilderness discovered by the enterprising, curious white people.
They're all gorgeous.
It just drives me nuts. I mean,
yeah.
A long-lost kid shows up... With a native looking headdress, and at first you see him backlit in silhouette, and you see the bow and you see the feathers, and you're like, finally, an Indian. And then it turns out just to be another pale Scots kid.
Where'd he get the headdress?
Well, he lived among the Mohawk. And I'm sitting there.
Oh, the old that's the Tarzan story again and again and again.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there scratching
like
my head, going, "Wait
Mary
a minute."
Mary MacDonald Dances with Wolves. The same. It's Tarzan. It's just Tarzan over and over.
But I'm scratching my head, going, "Wait, the Mohawk? Mohawk?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not doubting, but North Carolina, wouldn't he be more likely to? I mean, there are a bunch of different indigenous tribes and everything, but the first tribe that comes to mind is Cherokee. I guess those were wonderful, advanced, highly moral Scots land grabbers who didn't believe in slavery, even though it's North Carolina and even though the place was overrun with slavers.
It was legal. Yeah, it was allowed.
And I don't know if that's because they... I don't know if it's because I tried to read one of the books, and she's just a terrible writer, Diana Gabaldon, just awful. It brought to mind Truman Capote talking about Jack Kerouac's On the Road, when Truman Capote said, "That's not writing, that's typing." This was unreadable. It was terrible. So I don't know if it's her. I don't know if she just somehow missed all the Indians and black people that had something to do with the founding of this country. Or, and this is kind of the question I put to you as a working professional in the industry, have the negative aspects of our history become so toxic? And I'm not talking about political correctness or anything, because, one, I hate that term. That's just
me too.
Yeah, for political correctness is just a white people's term for not being able to say words that they really want to say in polite company. But is the history so toxic that we can't even portray it anymore, or that production companies are afraid to even attempt to portray it? Do you understand the nature of my question? I'm not being cranky.
You are a little. That's okay. It's okay to be a little cranky. There's so many directions to go with that question, because I think it depends on, production companies and quote unquote Hollywood. That's more than just just a single entity hive mind going on. You have people, you know, just to get any show or any project up and in production and on a network or on a screen, you know, it takes years and years of struggle and money and meetings and things get changed. Your original idea comes out the other side, unrecognizable. So, you know, I think there are many people going in many different directions with story now. There are some that I've not seen Outlander. I haven't seen WandaVision yet either, for that matter. But, you know, it sounds like there's a certain amount of, well, this is what our audience wants. You know, they probably the demographics show that the majority of the audience is white. And, you know, and entertainment has been segregated forever. I mean, especially forever, as if, well, yeah, I guess so. But at least let's say television and movies have been segregated and the content of that have been segregated from the time that they were developed and brought to mass audiences. So that even in the 90s, which by that point, you know, Martin Luther King had been dead for, you know, over 20 years, but there was still basically segregated television. You know, the obvious thing, you look at Friends, and you know, maybe there's a couple of black people in the coffee shop, you know, pretending to talk to one another. But the friends are all white, and you know, I don't think any of their friends are people of color. Maybe there's a one episode character who comes in and has a problem to solve, and they solve it, and then you never see that person. But and also too, the audiences, the demographics. Friends was, at least in its time, the number one show on television. You know, more people overall were watching it. But on the other hand, I think if you broke those numbers down by demographics, a show like Sister, from my understanding, you know, was a huge success in the, you know, almost every black. You know, a vast majority of black people watching television at that time watched Sister. You know, it was the number one show, all black show in the 90s, you know, that at least that I've read about. And your listeners can certainly correct me on a potential misstatement of facts. But the point is it's sort of like at that time, too, the WB network was like, OK, we're going to make a bunch of shows like Sister that are going to go specifically to the black audience. So you know, that is an underserved audience. They recognize that, to their credit. And we're going to give them a number of shows with predominantly black cast. And for all I know, hopefully, black creatives behind it in terms of writing and directing and producing. And then American television was, by and large, even post Cosby, was still basically here come the white people and their funny adventures. That usually needs be resolved to be in a half an hour or an hour.
That just needs to be a show in and of itself. I mean, if you haven't copyrighted that, get on that. Here come the white people.
Here come the white people. Well, these days, well, that could have been the title for January 6th, now, couldn't it have been?
Well, I don't think that did occur to me, too. And the reason I brought up Outlander is because, as I've said on this program before in our conversations, getting to know you again has done wonders for how I watch film and TV. And I pay closer attention to the little details now, and it makes for a richer viewing experience. And so I think one I mentioned to you, there was an episode of the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel where they were in the Catskills. Just because I was watching in terms of props, there's a scene where they go through the kitchen of the restaurant, and it's like, oh my God, that would make you crazy.
Huh.
Just, you know, just trying to provide, do the kind of work that you do. And so I brought up Outlander in particular because they are so meticulous. My God, the costuming is right down to the buttons. And they worked hard to get the language and the accents right and everything, and the makeup on Jamie's back from where he was whipped by the English are terrifyingly realistic. And so I just can't help wondering how the ball gets dropped. I mean, it all
has to start with the story and the characters and the scripts. And for series, it's different talking about the script for a movie versus the scripts for a TV show. Because a movie is generally written by, anywhere from 1 to 6 people, usually 1 or 2 people doing the initial draft and perhaps a number of people adding little touches and so forth. But in a series, is done usually with a writing staff. And an episode says written by, Dan Fisher, it's probably not just written by me. I get the main credit because maybe I did the bulk of it, but there are entire writers' meetings and so forth to create that episode and the entire season story arc. I mean, this is something that previous generations of television viewers really, if you watch like some of the great shows of the 70s or 80s, like Columbo or Hill Street Blues or All in the Family, there's not a lot of connectivity to those series. Every week you get a different episode. They did like 33 episodes a season. So every week would just be a different situation and nobody would mention what had happened. Hey, just last week I met Sammy Davis Jr. and he kissed me on the cheek. That never came up in a future episode of All in the Family. It would be just like it hadn't happened. So anyway, there is a point to what I was doing here, which was, answering your question, which is that it has to start with the script and just the original idea. And like everything, there's been a million fantastic ideas for movies and shows that just didn't get to the right person that could make them happen. Famously, some of the great movies, certainly of our time, like E.T. or The Godfather. I mean, those were movies that were originally proposed that were rejected by whatever studios until one studio and one particular studio head said, okay, I could see their movie being a movie about gangsters. It might make a little money. Or, again, E.T., it was like, well, we don't want to make a kid's movie, so we're going to pass on that. You have to find somebody willing to believe in your idea and put the money forth. And it can be for artistic reasons. It can be for somebody thinking, well, I could make a million bucks on this one if I just go ahead and go with it. So, but this creates a lot of flawed scripts, a lot of flawed ideas get pushed, whether it's, the white savior thing of a million movies like Dances with Wolves or The Green Mile or The Last Samurai, that might come in with really good intentions. The idea, I want to tackle, racial injustice. Well, I want to make Last Samurai or something like that. That might be your intention, but by the time it comes out, it's like, oh my God, there's a huge flaw in this. We have Tom Cruise fighting the battles for all of these supposedly, these samurais who've been training their whole lives, and yet somehow Tom Cruise is the greatest samurai of them all. This is just wrong. It's a bad
idea. Here come the white people.
But, somebody got to Tom Cruise and said, hey, would you want to be in a movie with samurai where you get to play the baddest ass samurai of them all? And I saw that movie a long time ago. He's trained to be a samurai the same way that Luke is trained to be a Jedi and whoever, the Karate Kid and all these things. There's the training aspect and he becomes the greatest of them all. So anyway, Tom Cruise says yes, that movie's made. And then they bring in the people like me and the designers and the costumers and the sound people who are often I'm not saying I'm nearly the best in my field, but they try to bring in the best they can get in their fields. So we're all polishing the turd, is really what it is. I could have just stopped this 10 minutes ago and just said we're all polishing the turd, Rob, because it's somebody brings us forth a turd on a nice silver platter and says, what do you think? Isn't this kind of cool and interesting? And do you
needs
think we can make money
needs a little
giving
polish.
This turd to other people? And well, and you see, we want jobs. The same way that, pretty much everybody wants a job out there because we need to pay our bills. It's like, well, yes, I do think that's an interesting and potentially meaningful turd. I would like to help you make that turd even more meaningful and more beautiful. And so we all get on board. And I might have told this story how many times already, but I did a low budget movie once where, you know, early on they were saying to me, well, we don't have any money, but it's a great script. It's a great script. And I took the job before reading the script, and I got the script, and I read it. I mean, this is terrible, you know?
This is
but
a turd.
Everybody around me is saying how great it is. So it's like, well, maybe I don't know something here. Or maybe it can be – maybe there's something visual that I just can't visualize, that when it becomes – an image on a screen, it's just going to open up a world that I hadn't seen. And then one day, like, the Teamster I was working with had nothing to do. So he just, like, you know, hey, can I read this? I'm like, sure. Because, you know, really, when a Teamster expresses a desire to read anything, it is a remarkable feat. So I let him read the script, and he's like, this is
well, I'm going to get hate mail from
the reasons why.
You know, this is a pro-labor radio show, Dan, and I'm going to get notes from the Teamsters now.
I am pro-labor too, but, you know, Teamsters have the best Teamster jokes. It's true that I cannot tell a Teamster joke. I'm not allowed to say, for instance, what do Teamsters kids do in the playground during lunchtime? The answer is they watch all the other kids play. I told the joke very poorly, but the basic thing is Teamsters sit around and make the most money.
Well, my dear friend Rick Smith, who is literally the
uh-oh
best labor talker in the country, is a Teamster, and
uh-huh
he told me this story once, and it stayed with me, obviously, and it was just delightful. He had this, you know what the Teamsters logo looks like, right? It's really dramatic.
Of course,
it's
the
got
horses.
It's got the horses.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had this gorgeous satin jacket, you know. And,
oh, yeah. They have great jackets.
And
it's a great logo.
Yeah, it's got the huge logo on the back. A young woman walked up to him and said, do you work with horses? Now, you got to understand, Rick's a big guy. And I mean that with all the love and respect in the world. This guy, you know, he's got shoulders that make me look delicate. Mm. And I got some shoulders.
I've seen your shoulders. They are impressive shoulders.
And so he's a big, strong guy. And so the next line, you work with horses? Are you a jockey? And every time Rick tells that, you know, I'll look at, tell me the Teamster story again, because I just love to hear him tell it. Are you a jockey? Yeah, because, you know, big guy, you know, football player,
yeah,
build,
listen,
lineman build. And
if Rick or any of his fellow brothers and sisters are listening to the show tonight, of course I love Teamsters, and again, you know, everybody in the industry always sort of makes fun of the Teamsters, but the fact is, we in my union, we are indebted to the Teamsters. You know, all of us
can't live without them. Yeah, and
right,
of course,
because
I ruined the whole story by, so you get him to read the script that you thought was a real dog.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and
right.
What happened?
You ruined the story. You enhanced it, and he just started pointing out all the stupid bad things of the script, and I just thought, you know what, every job, every production should really,
man, this thing blows
with all the they, you know, you have these writers' rooms, and you have, like, you know, it gets crazy, the number of quote unquote producers on any production now. It'll be like 24 people, and what are they all doing? You know, I really think that every production now should hire a Teamster to either sit in the writing room or be one of the quote unquote producers. And his or her job would be to read the script and then go, like, well, this is bullshit. Who would do this? Only an idiot, you know, and say it in that falls out Teamster way.
Only an idiot.
Are you fucking kidding me? Who the fuck does this? You know, because it's really like, well, that's artistic. It's artistic. Look,
nah, it's bullshit.
People don't do that. You know, what are you talking about? Art? What are you talking about? Poetry? This is stupid. You know, I'd love to hear that, those meetings. Because
yeah,
one thing you gotta say about Teamsters, they have zero fucks to give, and God bless them for it. And that's really why, you know, we in my union and so many other laborers are indebted to them, because, you know, my labor leaders, my union president and so forth, they can say no and they can push back against things that studios and producers are asking for. But real clout comes from the Teamsters, because it's like, yeah, you can try to shoot a movie, but if you can't get the cameras and the set pieces and the costumes to set, it ain't going to be much of a movie. You know, you can make a movie without, you can arguably make a movie without costumes. You can arguably make one without props, but you can't do it without a camera. And you can't do it if people can't get to the location, can't get to the studio, because there's no vehicles to take those items there.
Well, you'll be interested to know that Arnold, who works closely with Rick, just wrote in to say, we have gimmick infringement. Robin. No, Arnold owns, that's right, Arnold owns Robin. He laid claim to that the other day. Old story. Subject line, Teamsters. Robin. 60% of them voted for Trump. Their judgment is extremely questionable. So
who knows? That's the other thing, too. I don't get into political discussions with Teamsters because I just don't want to know. I don't want to go there. And honestly, there so many of them are intimidating as any human being I've ever met in my life. Even if they're not any physically bigger than me, Teamsters just in general have big presences. You know, there's just something. And if they're aggressive, they walk around with zero fucks to give. And when you're up against anybody with zero fucks to give, you're at an immediate disadvantage. You know, if I when I was a kid and I was up in a playground and a kid came up to me with zero fucks to give, I was going to get the shit kicked out of me, because I do have fucks to give. And that's the difference. I don't want to hurt people. And some people don't care if they do, you know, or some people don't care if they offend you. Some people don't care if you're pissed off at what they have to say. They're going to say it. And, you know, I'm not condemning them for it. I'm just stating what it is. And I think the majority of Teamsters, at the very least, have zero fucks to give. And it wouldn't surprise me if a great many of them did vote for Trump and still support that person. It's funny, because on the last job I did, the Teamster I worked with, who drove our truck, was a liberal. And it was sort of like, it was sort of maybe like you coming out a little bit, in that, you know, he had to sort of take little footsteps before he could sort of, it's like, you know, he would listen in on conversations that we'd have in our shop. And most of us were good, well-intentioned, white liberal types, like myself. And then eventually it'd be sort of like he'd add a little joke here and there and see how that'd go over, but never in the presence of his partner. And then little by little, it was like, oh, you're one of them? Yeah, don't tell anybody, sort of things. So Kenny is his name. A sweet, sweet man. Sings Irish tunes with his band on the weekends out near where he lives in Long Island. Fine gentleman. Just became a grandfather recently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, so there's that.
That's not, well, and Arnold, who wrote in a moment ago, knows of which he speaks, because I know he's heard, he works with Rick, and he's heard Rick tell the "Are You a Jockey" story. I mean, that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Couple of notes coming in. One, thanks to Jeremy jumping in this evening. Thank you, Jeremy, so very much. That gets us down below the $200 mark, which is awesome. Thank you, Jeremy. And then Angelo wrote in from the People's Republic of the Bronx.
My neighbor, more or less.
Hollywood will never portray African-Americans accurately so long as there aren't any in decision-making or creative positions. Corporate directors want return on investment, and white people want to watch other white people. It's that simple. Watch any video by Kevin Smith, especially his experience with Superman, and you'll see why so much trash is in the movies today and how decisions are made. We have to make our own movies as we did back in the day. And
Spike's been saying that since I got into the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did Mario Van Peebles, for that matter.
And, you know, it's maybe some of it's beginning to happen. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really eager to see, and I hope it's good. And by that, I mean, you know, it's based on a historical event, and I hope the license was not too broad, but, One Night in Miami, that looks fantastic.
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of Sam Cooke, and obviously a fan of all. I'm a fan of all of them, you know. Jim Brown is the greatest, to me, still the greatest running back of all time. Not such a great human being. He had his issues with women, let's just say. But he was an inspiration for, I know, for a lot of black people of that time and you know, athletes and so forth. He really, you know, there was nobody like him on the football field. I don't think there ever will be again.
Oh,
but I'd love to see that.
I think it's just that historic, you know, intersection took place. And like I said, yeah. I you got to hope with a production like that, with so much, you know, so much history behind it, that they really busted their ass to get it right. Got a book recommendation.
Yeah,
let me just say one
thing though first, which is that I do know of that meeting. I did know of it before I'd heard about this coming movie, because there's an excellent documentary on Netflix about Sam Cooke. I forget what it's called, something, not The People versus Sam Cooke, but something like that. This conspiracy against the people, something like that. But it's on Netflix, put in Sam Cooke. And it's fascinating because I love Sam Cooke's music, but a lot of it is very sort of happy, upbeat stuff, you know, with the exception of Change Is Going to Come. It was, and he did sort of create a lot of music for that middle of the road white audience. You know, he really did court the white ears, with stuff like, you know, having a party and cha-cha-cha and everything. And he did supper club dates in Vegas and all that. But he was surprisingly very political, more than I realized, more than A Change Is Going to Come. He was an activist. And he was, by activist, I mean, he was active. He was present. And I had a tremendous more respect and admiration than I already had to begin with by watching that documentary.
Well, I'm looking, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. But I also have a book here, courtesy of your neighbor Lee in New York. A book Dan might appreciate, assuming you've never read this, but this looks fun. The title's wonderful. The book is called A Martian Wouldn't Say That, Memos TV Execs Wish They Hadn't Written.
I've not read that one. I'll have to write that one down. I'm writing it down right now.
So can I, since we're being frivolous and we're talking entertainment.
Did want to talk about meteor stuff tonight, but that's okay. You know, I even pulled up here. I even pulled up a letter from Brigham Jail and was going to talk a little bit about that and maybe discuss compare, you know, King and the civil rights struggle in general versus, you know, and what they did in terms of peaceful protest and a passive resistance to fight injustice versus the MAGAs and the siege on the Capitol. You know, because those people see themselves as heroes. They see themselves as patriots. And we know that they're wrong. And we can explain why they're wrong. And I'm not going to waste too much breath on that here, because I would like to think that most of us already know this. But it's really interesting, too. Just if you look at what... Not only, you know, we tend to give King credit for everything, and he did so much, but it's not like, you know, Stokely Carmichael, or it's not that, you know, like John Lewis or whatever didn't exist, or, you know, the SNCC or what have you. There were, you know, it took armies of people in order to change, all those decades of Jim Crow.
Yes.
And it's not, you know, and that it's not changed enough. You know, that's the myth, too, that, oh, Dr. King just sort of wiped away everything. And we're good.
Well, that,
right?
and that's why.
You know,
that's
Obama
why
Obama was president. We're good, right? No,
yeah,
we're not.
Yeah, we're done now. And it there's an echo in what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said when she was asked, "Well, how many women should be on the Supreme Court?"
Hmm.
And her answer was 9, all of them.
Sure.
You know, I think the same thing works in the other direction. What I mentioned, every King holiday year, I kind of issue a little warning, and you probably heard it when you tuned in, and that is the Santa Clausification
yes,
of Dr. King.
Yes.
And 500 years from now, he'll be this this jolly black man who brings presents to good non-racist children in mid-January, if they've been good and non-racist. And I know that sounds, I'm not being dismissive. I'm trying to legitimately warn against what happens and what is happening and what can be seen happening every year. And
sure.
I like the I like the idea of treating it as a national day of service. I think it should be. And there's nowhere that needs something like this more than a place like West Virginia does.
Well, yeah, and I see, you know, I see it not quite in the analogy of Santa Claus. I see it more, I call it the MLK hand puppet, because it's like it's almost, to me, I imagine a literal puppet version of Martin Luther King that anybody can put on. And then, you know, he says it's okay if we don't give money to Planned Parenthood or whatever, you know. He thinks it's okay that the Capitol Patriots were expressing themselves. It wasn't a riot. What about BLM? You know.
Right.
It's shameful, and it's dehumanized. It's literally dehumanizing of a human being who had flaws. Who wasn't a god, who didn't do everything, but on the other hand, did a fantastic amount of self-sacrifice and service, as you point out, to make things better. And listen, you know, I've read about and I've heard about the letter from Brigham Jail. And if I'd had more time today, I had hoped to have actually read through the whole damn thing. But basically, too, what it really is it just takes reminders. It was really directed not at like the public at large. It was a specific letter to a bunch of clergymen, you know, white clergymen who had condemned and attacked him, you know, just for being in Birmingham at the time, you know, that you know, saying that who are also criticizing the movement itself as too much too soon. And you have to be patient, you know, patient and reasonable. And his response was, well, you know, there has to come a point where things have to change, and you know, as the people in power have to be, you can't just be patient. You have to be active yourself. You know, the words and sentiment and being on the quote unquote good side is useless if you're not doing anything to turn things around, you know, to implement the change, be a part of the change in some form or another. And to this day, we're all guilty of it. By we're all, I mean, we all white, default people, especially now in my case, white man. I'm the default, right? I'm the one that's got, you know, all the check marks next to my name. You know, we always have to do more. You know, we always have to contribute more, both not only our ideas and our words. We have to get our asses out there. We have to stand by, and we have to do what we can to change things so that we don't other. I'm constantly guilty of othering because I did grow up in a time of that, you know, basically convinced me that I'm more or less right about things because, you know, because I was told things from a white man's perspective. So that became my truth. And because I coincidentally was a white man, that it was just truth. It was just accepted, you know, and little by little, I've had to unlearn the truths to find the real truth. But I'm getting there. I'm 56 and I'm getting there. And it's also why, you know, for his many flaws and his many faults and things he's done. And I'm still pissed at the Anita Hill stuff. I do believe that Joe Biden is a person who is willing to acknowledge his own flaws and is willing to change, at least to an extent. I can only hope. If I were to pray, I'd say I pray that he continues to evolve. And be a real instrument of change rather than just a mouthpiece for it.
Well, I think you've done a fine job of establishing all of our hopes. You know, you mentioned letter from Birmingham Jail, and I think it's applicable 365 days a year. But the one passage in there about how you know, he says, among other things, um, In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And I think that comes from letter from Birmingham Jail, and in that passage where he says that, you know, the greatest enemy of progress is not the people who say no, but the people who say wait. And you know, and he excoriates righteously the people who said no, we agree with you, but you know, this is not the time.
Right. He saw them as more dangerous than the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, because it means that, and in so many ways we have seen that in so many different aspects of society and culture. You know, every time some young white male homicidal maniac asshole cuts loose in a school with his freedom protector and murders some children, the first thing that the Republicans always say is, well, now's not the time to talk about gun control.
Right. Too soon.
It's too soon. You know, we can talk about it, but wait. And that's exactly what Dr. King was talking about. You know, that's how that's how we got from Sandy Hook to Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. Wait.
Yeah. But here's an interesting thing, too, in terms of, you know, that King called the white moderate tendency toward passive acceptance of racial inequality and an acceptance of an unjust system, calling it more dangerous than the Ku Klux Klan. The problem with that then is it's like it's similar to that thing I've heard my whole life, and I bet you have too, where somebody or other says, well, you know, my I've got black friends and they'll say they'd rather hear me say the N-word than people who are that way but don't say anything. At least they know where they stand. You know, they say that they'd rather be down in Jackson, Mississippi than in New York, because at least in Jackson, Mississippi, they may tell you they hate you, but they're going to tell you to your face, you know. And it's like, well, wait a minute. That doesn't mean that you get to be racist, because what, you know, King considered moderates and the acceptance of the social system as being more dangerous than the Ku Klux Klan. That doesn't mean you get a free pass to use the N-word or, you know, your black best friend or your, you know, the black guy that dated your sister once said this thing. You don't get a get out of racism free card for that. You know, it's all bad. And it's, you know, it should all be remedied in one form or another.
Well, one hopes that this will be, yes, one hopes that this will be a Dr. King holiday that perhaps we will remember because of what it comes immediately before. Maybe, you know, maybe this Dr. King holiday is the Dr. King holiday where we begin to turn something resembling of a corner. Because it goes back to what I said earlier, we have the work of generations ahead of us. I mean, babies born today will be working on this. You know, when they're adults and we're worm food. But that doesn't mean you don't make the commitment, and that doesn't mean that you get to say, well, you know, we'll let them handle it. Because it's 2021. We've already squandered 4 years on climate change when we know that we've got to get our shit together by 2029. And, you know, and so we're going to, for instance, you know, we're going to get back into the Paris Climate Accords if the world will have us. And good. And we're going to, there's going to be sweeping immigration reform that will be announced the day of the inauguration. And hopefully, we will take further steps to remediate the massive failures in what we call criminal justice, but in fact is just in so many instances is nothing more than an extension of 150 years of Jim Crow.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you here too, because, you know, my son, who's also a white man, But my son just graduated with his master's degree in journalism, video journalism and documentary film from City University of New York. And he has done a tremendous amount of work, including the 20-minute documentary he made for his final project on, and I know this has been covered by others, he examined a very specific state of looking at the prison industrial complex and how it's become, you know, the criminal justice system is basically feeding workers. That's it's basically creating a slave system for products we use all the manufacturer products that we use all the time. You know, the park benches you sit in your local park, or the trash can, you know, a lot of stuff. Basically, you know, anything that a municipality purchases from an outside agency in large quantities to provide to the public, like a park bench or those grills, those like charcoal grills that you can get at a park, or school desks, or chairs in schools, and of course the standard license plates, of course, those are all produced in prisons, and those are where the laborers are making an average of 61 cents for an hour. And the majority of those people doing that are black or Hispanic, but a tremendous amount of black labor. It's basically slavery in its own different form. And my son could explain it in far better terms than I could. And I'm just saying this also, interjecting this, because at some point you should have him on the show to be dedicated just to this subject. Because boy,
sounds like a wonderful idea.
Boy, can he talk your ears off about it? He knows his stuff. You know, he is a master of something now. By the way, he's got the degree to prove it. So,
well, I remember when Michael Bloomberg had his dalliance with the presidential campaign.
Yeah,
and the people and his phone people, who were calling, you know, vote for Mike. Turned out that was. The company hired prison labor out of, I think, a women's prison in Colorado.
Mm.
And Jesus, you know, the thought of the indignity involved with having someone, you know, again, 60 cents an hour or something,
mm-hmm.
To make calls to get people to cast votes that person may very well never be able to cast in her own right.
Right. And for a candidate who at one time was all for things like stop and frisk and that sort of pro-law and order agenda, which is really something beyond creating any sort of real order, you know, creating anything in the way of an order that would at least improve our society and bring crime down. It was just about putting bodies in the right places so that things can be done, you know, and those things that are done are not only manufacturing desks and charcoal grills, but it's also manufacturing statistics that a potential presidential candidate can wave around and say, look, I reduce crime. I put more bodies in jail than that other guy. Well, you put bodies in jail. Did you really reduce crime? You know, have you redefined what crime is? Are you, we could go 3 hours on that topic. Not that I have a head full of knowledge, again, like Augustus Montana Fisher could hand over to you. But,
what a name.
It's something. Well, Augustus comes from Augustus McCrae.
How did I know?
Lead character in Lonesome Dove, both the book and the miniseries. And Montana was, because that's where Helene and I met for the first time and formed an instant dislike, which eventually bloomed into like, bloomed into love, bloomed to marriage and the baby carriage. So, yeah, that's why he's Augustus Montana.
Wait, y'all didn't like each other at first?
Oh, no. I'm surprised you didn't know that story. And as always, I've got my eye on the clock, you know.
I know.
Briefly, yeah, we met. We both took the same small plane together to do a job. She used to work in film for a brief period of time in the accounting department. And I was going to do my art department thing. And we happened to be on the same small plane flying to Bozeman, where a PA picked us up and drove us into the little town of Ennis, Montana, which is where a movie was being filmed that we worked on. And on the car ride over, you know, we were just chit-chatting about stuff. And somehow in there, I got the impression that she was a stuck-up New Yorker, snobby. And she thought I was a know-it-all who talked out of my ass. And we were both basically right in a lot of ways. But, you know, as with all friendships and all love, you start to, you know, learn that there's more to people than just, you know, that one side of them. And my wife of over 27 years now is a very multifaceted person and is never, has never been boring to me. She's always interesting and different than me in a lot of ways, which I like. You know, I don't want Dan Fisher part two for my wife. I wanted somebody to give me a little bit of horse shit give me a little pushback when I express something that turns out,
yes,
to be horse shit.
Yeah. When you were purveying the horse shit, you wanted someone to say, why, that's not violets.
That's right. I actually like that, you know, and she's funny as hell. But there's so many reasons I love my wife, but we'll be married to her for hopefully another 20 something years before I'm worm food. But we didn't like each other, but we love each other now. That's for sure.
Oh, that's just lovely.
Oh, should I maybe segue into the thing you and I talked about?
Yes. It's time.
I think it's time. Okay, this is a treat. This is something that I came up with, and I'm going to give you a little backstory on it too. The backstory is that we're going to, for the last half hour or so of the show, I'm going to make Robin participate in a game, and the game is called Beat the Intro. Beat the Intro was a game that was introduced to Helene, my wife, and then to me by our dear friend Todd Graff. Todd is a former child actor. He was on the original Electric Company when he was a kid.
Holy cow.
If you put Todd Graff Electric Company, you get to see some really groovy 1970s stuff going on there. Did I lose you for sound for a second?
No, I'm right here.
Okay. Then Todd was in the movie The Abyss. He played a character named Hippie in that. And he's been in a bunch of other movies, but then he had more of an urge to be a writer and director. So since then, he's written and directed a number of movies, including one called Band Slam, another one called Joyful Noise that starred Dolly Parton and Kris Kristofferson. And he's just one of the best people. And Todd's just one of those people that everybody, you know, I've worked in this industry for a long time, and Todd's not famous like you know, a lot of directors, writers, actors might be. But everybody knows Todd. Like, everybody in the industry knows Todd Graff and loves Todd Graff. Like, if I were to just drop his name in the middle of a film set, I guarantee you that a few heads would swivel and go, you know Todd Graff? It's like, yeah, I know Todd Graff. He walked my wife down the aisle when we got married, you know, because he and Helene were best friends in college. So anyway, I tell you all of this because Todd did not invent this game, but he certainly introduced it to me and is certainly... in the 40 years that we've been playing it, has certainly helped spread the gospel of Beat the Intro. And it's become an obsession with a lot of us. And during the pandemic, it's really been one of those things that a number of us have relied on to help fill our time in a way that this brings a deep satisfaction to the point where I'm running my own BTI games now on Zoom. That's where I'm going with this. He now does a Zoom version which I've adopted, and sometime or other, Robin, I'm really going to force you into joining us for like a full fledged game.
Oh yes, yes. I'm definitely down for teams against teams.
So what BTI is really is it's a combination of Name That Tune with Family Feud when you're playing the team version. Now tonight we're going to just play the Robin version. I'm going to play a bunch of intros to popular songs. I've mixed them going from the 60s through the 90s. And we will see if Todd can beat the intro. Now, in the team scoring,
yes.
Robin, if Robin.
And I did just realize the minute I looked him up, I went, oh, yeah, him. Because he was in one of the movies. I love The Abyss.
Yeah. It's a terrific movie. He was also in a thing called Dominic and Eugene.
Yes.
Tom Hulse. Yeah. So, he certainly, you know, could have been, continued to have been an actor and done well at it. But he's always had talent for writing and from that developed into a fine director. And, you know, he does these sort of little movies that, you know, they're not like the 3,000 theater, you know, in a weekend sort of things. But that's what he wants to do. And he's developing TV shows. He's always doing something. He does a lot of ghostwriting on screenplays or script doctoring, that kind of thing. You know, and he's got a lot of famous friends, and he's just, he's a hell of a guy. And so this game is going to be just with you and me tonight. It's just a little sampling of what it is. If it were a team version, you'd be on a team and you'd be, everybody takes a turn and you go up and you listen to a song. And if you can guess the exact name of the song and the exact artist before the vocal comes in, you get 3 points. Now, let's say you can't get it before the vocal starts. You can still continue to play. And if you guess the name of the song, well, that's a point. If you can guess the name of the artist, that's a point, another point. So you could get 2 points. But let's say you only guess one of them. You know that the song is Smells Like Teen Spirit, but for some stupid reason or another, you think it's Pearl Jam. Okay, well, you got that wrong. Or you couldn't come up with the name of the song, whatever. You got one of the two right. Smells Like Teen Spirit, but it's not Pearl Jam. It goes back to the other team. And, you know, like Family Feud, that's where then the team can all conspire. It no longer becomes an individual game. The team then gets together and says, okay, who did Smells Like Teen Spirit? Wasn't Pearl Jam? I think it was Soundgarden. No, it wasn't Soundgarden. It was Nirvana. Everybody knows it's Nirvana. So they guess it's Nirvana. Then that team gets a point. Make sense?
Yes. That sounds like a blast. And
Agnes. If the other, if the second team doesn't get a chance, doesn't get the steal right, they can go back to the original team that you, the individual, were on. The whole team can then try to win that point, etc. But the main thing, the main appeal of the game I found is that just you hear a song that you haven't heard maybe in like 30, 40 years. And it's amazing. You still know it, right? But on the other hand, you know it, but you don't know it. Like, oh, it's by that guy. And then when you finally hear the answer, you're just like, you want to kick yourself. It's like, I knew it. You know, you hear that all the time. I knew that. Why didn't you say it? Well, I didn't really know it.
I didn't know it yet.
Yeah. And it's just, it's so much fun. Maybe we'll explain more about the rules or talk more about it after we play. I think it's more fun to just go ahead and play. And then at some point, I really want to try to make BTI or Beat the Intro a national craze that all of us can play with our friends and family on Zoom to get through this horrific time in our nation's and world's history.
Oh, it'd be awesome to do like a horn BTI.
Exactly. It can be anybody. You get the members of the horn together, and you do it on Zoom, so you're seeing each other's faces. I mean, we played on Christmas Day. We had, you know, family. We had like some of Helene's family and some of my family. And a lot of them had never met, you know, and there are actually a few on Helene's side that I'd never met. So we're all in this Zoom room. And instead of being like, so how's school and, you know, trying to come up with desperate conversation topics, guess what? You're playing a game, you know? So, and within that, you do get to have moments of conversation and you do get to find out little things about one another. And you just sort of learn who each other, you know, how you are. Is this person a jerk? Is this person funny? Is this person cool? You get all of that. It's the same way when you get together for a game of cards or Monopoly. I love games. You know, games unite us. Games can bring this country. Games can heal this nation, I tell you.
Unless it's Risk.
And I'm not going to play with any MAGAs, but that's another thing. That being said, so, Robin, I'm going to play you a song. I'm not going to give you any hints about it. And I think I'm going to have it. Let me just check my volumes. Actually, let me do a test song first, okay? This is not a quiz song. Tell me how this sounds. Is that a good volume? Is it too loud?
I didn't get anything.
You're not getting anything. Oh, fuck me.
Yeah.
Are you not getting anything?
No, nothing. This is wild because it worked. It worked early. Look, here's an
idea. As they say in the industry, it worked during the rehearsals, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I got an idea. This may remedy the problem. If you don't mind, disconnect from me for a moment, and then call me back, and I'll bring you in on a different device. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
It really did. It worked during rehearsals. So we'll see if it works again. I've been looking forward to this all day long. So maybe, just maybe. Okay, Dan, do I have you?
Let's see. Yeah, and let me try this sample song here. Tell me if you hear music. Do you hear songs?
Nothing. Not a blessed thing.
Oh, God dang it. What did I do differently that I...
Well, I moved over to the device I was on when we teched this morning. So...
Yeah. Shoot. Let me...
Okay, just okay. I'm going to do another thing for a second here. And we're going to find out if it's a me thing. And if it is, we'll see. So people will not hear you coming through the line now. Let's see. Volume's up. Okay, try now, Dan.
Sorry, folks. This was going to be really fun, I swear to you. Okay, let me try it now. I'm hearing the music. Let's see if you do. Are you hearing anything?
Not a blessed thing. So that wasn't the problem. Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna do the low tech version then.
Okay. Just yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I had you back through the board. Good.
Okay. I'm gonna improvise a low tech version, and we're gonna just do what we can to play a little bit of the game. And the next time, by God, folks, it'll be perfect. Okay. So. Let me pull up a song. I'm going to play it through my iPhone into your microphone. Okay? So here's – are you ready to try this? Let's just do something.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to play a song through my iPhone, and at a certain point I'll stop it. And if you can get it before the intro before the vocal comes in, I'm going to give you points. Doggone it. Okay, but this is what we're going to do. Here we go.
Smart one is on.
Oh, that's not the song I want, though. Okay, here's the song I want. Where are you? Oh, doggone it. Maybe I should. Okay, here's an easy one for you. Here's an example. Here comes your intro.
Okay, I got it.
What is the song and who is the artist?
The Tide is High.
Yeah.
Blondie. Debbie Harry.
That is correct. You would have gotten 3 points because the intro had not ended yet. So that's one. Let me see if I can pull up something or other that's also another fun one that you would know. Oh, doggone it. I had it all set up, Bob. It was going to be so great.
Well, Arnold just told me that Skype filters music, whether licensed or unlicensed, and what I don't understand is why it worked this morning.
Yeah, because we were on Skype. We did... Folks, I know this seems half-assed, but we really practiced this, and it was really going to be cool.
Well, it still is.
It still kind of is.
It's just that it sounds like the music's being played through the speaker of a 73 Ford Pinto.
Yeah, I know. Okay, here's another one for you, then.
Okay. You sound so let down. Don't be. We're having fun.
I know. You hear it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
In a way, this is the vocal that already started. I just picked this one randomly. Any idea of the song or the artist?
Is it Cool in the Gang?
It is indeed Cool in the Gang. Yes. So that would have been a point.
And, it's obviously not Get Down, Get Down.
That would not be the name of this.
No, it's Get Down on It.
That is incorrect.
No.
The name of the song is Jungle Boogie. Okay, I'm pulling up.
See, I was between Get Down on It and Jungle Boogie at the and.
Well, that's the thing, right?
It's like
you know what it is, but yet you don't know what it is, or it's like you have an instinct, and then you ignore the instinct. Okay, here's another one.
Okay, stop. Just stop.
You know what?
Yep. Bad, Bad Leroy Brown, Jim Croce.
There you go. See, that's your era too, right?
Well, you know, I'm putting my street cred as an old DJ at hazard here. So, you know, there's that too. I've got a my brain is an involuntary MP3 player.
But you're doing really well, because like when I invited you to play before, you were like, oh, I suck at this stuff, or you know, you said something like that. You declined when I invited you recently to play in a real game where the audio worked, he says ruefully. So this is proof. You would do just fine.
Okay. Got another one?
I've got another one queued up here. And again, here we go, coming from the iPhone.
Oh, I'm thoroughly stumped.
You've never heard this? Wait till the vocal. That's always the trick, too, with BPI. Because even if you don't know the song, if you never heard it in your life, maybe once you hear it, maybe it gives you the end.
Nope. I'm beat.
No idea at all. People, you know that somebody is screaming at their.
Yes,
their,
yes. Their I'm gonna get emails all night long. I can't believe you didn't know that.
It's Pearl Jam.
I see.
And it's Alive. The song's called Alive.
See, that's kind of 90s-ish, and we were all absorbed in like raising babies and stuff in the 90s, and my knowledge of popular music diminished dramatically.
Yeah, me too. Because that's the time that you stop listening to a lot of stuff. You know, is like when you get out of college, it gets harder to find the time. You know, to listen to stuff you love and music.
And to be honest, and this is just I'm going to get email over this too. I was never that big of a grunge guy, girl, whatever.
I went through the grunge thing.
Just didn't speak to me that much.
I think just because, you know, at that point I started to get kind of over music a bit, you know, that I was out of college and I was a young man in his 20s, you know, keeping my nose to the grindstone. I just didn't have the leisure time I had. And also I was surrounded by a lot of like boy bands and Britney Spears. So suddenly like hearing people with, you know, play guitars and
yeah,
you know, all
yeah,
that stuff,
yeah.
screaming into the mic. That I was like, wow, this is cool. You know, rock lives once more. So let me give you one more, I think, okay?
Oh, I mean, we got 15 minutes.
You got 15 minutes. Okay, well, here's another intro all queued up for you.
Okay. Beach Boys, God Only Knows.
There you go. Beach Boys, God Only Knows. Love that song. Did you ever hear the Neil Diamond version of that? Oh, it's execrable.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Execrable.
Yeah, execrable.
God only knows what I'd be without you. It's something else.
That just sounds, you know, no. I remember hearing Eddie Arnold singing Take Me Home Country Roads. And
just didn't work.
Didn't work.
Give your toots in the Maytals, do their reggae version?
version of that?
No.
It's actually pretty cool. I mean, they say West Jamaica instead of West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
So I love Toots and the Maytals. Yeah. But, you know, listen, wherever you are, you can pine for for being back home where things were simple, mm-hmm. you know, where the land is beautiful and unspoiled. Those sentiments carry wherever you are. You don't have to be from Virginia.
Right. Wait a minute.
So, okay, since you're doing good on the 60s and 70s, here's a 70s intro. You ready?
Okay. Okay. This is fun. You can stop.
Really? Okay.
Fog hat, free ride.
That's 1 point for the correct title, but you got the artist wrong. It's actually Edgar Wintergreen.
Oh, it is. Oh, God. I was too confident of myself. That's...
Because you think it's slow ride.
Yeah. Yes. You think it's yes. Slow, yes. Slow ride.
Fog hat. Fog. That's no. Oops. Oh, here we go. How about this one?
Oh, that's the Monkees, Daydream Believer.
Yeah, no, that just happened. I'm the worst butt dialer in the world, and somehow I just butt dialed that video. So,
yeah, and you know, a whole new generation knows that song from the Shrek movies.
This is true too. I'm a believer in all that. Sure. I'm looking for something fun.
Yeah, because one of the things that we talked about was songs you can't use because the intro is too damn long.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. The 80s, you know, you and I are talking about this morning, which is that the history of intros in American popular music, and I guess British music, too, it's really kind of interesting if you kind of dive deep into it, as I've been doing to do this game. Like, I have over 600 intros now in my iTunes library, you know, just little 30-second, 55-second snippets of songs from the 50s all the way into the current stuff. And you know, like in the 60s, for example, intros were by and large very, very short. You know, like the Beatles, which is...
Because studio time was expensive.
Well, but also it's just, I think they just felt like, what was the feeling they wanted with the song? So it was like, close your eyes. You know, it's just like, boom. There's no waiting around for a little filler or for the DJ to finish talking. It's just like, no. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Oh, you're in the song. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Or bump, ba-dum, bump. I know you want to leave me. You know.
You know, you sing a lot better than I do. Right? So, yeah. That's a big help.
But the 70s, you know, the 70s, the intro started to expand and become sort of its own thing, so that, you know, one of my songs, and you said it was one of your favorite too of the 70s, Baker Street by Jerry Rafferty.
Oh, God, yes. That sax.
Gorgeous song. But that's sax and everything. But the intro goes on for almost 2 minutes before you get, why didn't you wake down in Baker Street? You know, it takes about a minute and 40 seconds or something like that before you hear the vocal. So, you know, that would be a really bad song for Beat the Intro, because you either don't know it and you're mystified and bored for 40 seconds, or you know it in 5 seconds. So what's the point of listening to a minute and a half of it?
Exactly.
So I think a number of my BTI friends are probably listening tonight. And so.
And they're saying, you know, Dan's taking it awfully easy on Robin. Yes.
I am taking it easy, but I'm also, that's why I'm a little aggravated that I can't get the sound to work the way I really wanted it to work tonight. I wanted to impress my friends, and I didn't, maybe I did, but not the way I really wanted to impress them. So, you know, if you
He's
guys
still impressive,
there,
y'all.
I can do better. I can do, and I will do better. And of course, you know, the sound has worked, you know, really well when I've done the Zoom things. So, this is, you know, Skype is a different platform, so somehow or other, it just didn't communicate tonight.
Well, it's a Microsoft product, and that explains a lot.
Could be. You know, because, you know, Bill Gates has to spend all this time inventing those little microchips that go into our bloodstream.
Yes, the liquid barcodes.
Mm-hmm. I want a little tiny Raquel Welch to go into my bloodstream you know, driving a little submarine. That's what
exactly.
I
exactly. Incredible journey.
That's right. Although I hear she's, you know, I've never worked with I was going to say Robin Welch, but that's not true. I have worked with, but I haven't worked with Raquel Welch ever in my career. But I hear she's not not the most pleasant person to work with all the time.
And of course, the last surviving castaway was also said to be hard to work with.
Tina Louise. Or Ginger, yeah.
Yeah, she was under the impression starting out, I read somewhere, that it was supposed to be a serious drama. And didn't quite work out that way. Maybe that's one of those things that happens between, you know, the scripting idea and the final production, like you were talking about earlier.
I think Sherwood Schwartz kind of got into, you know, I think he developed it the way he did from the beginning. I don't think he ever thought it was going to be, you know, Rod Serling territory. I think he knew there were going to be coconuts falling on heads, you know.
Coconut bicycles, yes.
Yeah, coconut bicycles, bamboo, submarines that somehow can't get them off the island. And they can't make a radio to save their lives.
Okay, what was the joke Beatles band that showed up on the island?
I do not know. You stumped the master.
It was the Mosquitoes.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. There was that period of time where every sitcom had to have like their Beatles episode, right? Like Beverly Hillbillies. It's like, you know, Granny and Jed, and they're all putting on the wigs, and we're going to form us one in rock and roll bands, you know, sort of thing.
Mosquitoes like and the Mosquitoes were Bingo, Bango, Bongo, and Fred. And then, of course, then on the Flintstones, it was Bug Music.
Right. And I still remember the song was like, he said, yeah, yeah, yeah. She said, yeah. We said, yeah. It was like 3 minutes of that.
Yeah. And of course, the scene from Peggy Sue Got Married, where she tries to change history and she gives Nicolas Cage the lyrics to She Loves You. And of course,
I don't
remember
this.
And of course, proving that history cannot be time, you know, the past cannot be changed. Her goes on to become a, well, whatever. But he's part of a, it's before the British invasion. And so it was all boy vocal bands and girl vocal bands. And so she gives him, she gives him the lyrics to She Loves You. And he says, yeah, and I changed it. And it's so much better. Listen, she loves you, ooh, ooh, ooh. She loves you, ooh, ooh, ooh. Have I lost you, Dan? Are you there, Dan? Well, I hate it when that happens. Let's try this again. I don't know why we disconnected. Are you there, Dan?
I am. The subtitle to this one could be technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Yeah, no kidding. So anyway, he changed She Loves You, yeah, 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 to She Loves You, ooh, ooh, ooh. And, you know, so.
I vaguely remember that. I haven't seen that since I saw it in the Beckley. I saw it in the Beckley Mall because that was 86. That's when I was working on Matewan. And I remember seeing that movie with the set decorator for Matewan.
Oh, wow.
She hated it. I liked it.
I liked it. It's sweet.
I liked it. Well, I think she was like, oh, Coppola's so overrated, you know. But the guy only made a few masterpieces. I think he deserves a little credit.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a little bit of sour grapes, frankly. But, you know.
Well, she was okay.
So do you have it? We got a couple of minutes left. Do you have one more?
I bet I do. Let me pull up something here. Let me see if I can find some.
You've started something.
Okay. This one has kind of a long intro, but and let me pull it up on YouTube. So I'm pulling up on YouTube, so I got to let the commercial play through a second.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, here it is. This is, I'll give you a hint, this is from the 80s.
Wait, was that it? I mean, I just heard it.
Yep. Maybe you'll get it on the first note. Let's see.
Yeah, it's the Hooters.
And what's the song?
And We Danced.
There you go. Okay, harder one. I swear, this one will be harder. You.
Is that Prince?
It's not Prince. It's a long intro, so if you were playing, I'd encourage you just to wait. It's been used in a lot of commercials, too, this song. Have you heard the song?
No, that's lost on me.
Yeah, well, you know what, Stu? It is an early 90s song, and that seems to be your Achilles heel. It's the 90s. What, you used to be a radio DJ, right? So you probably, I mean, that's one reason you know, like, 70s and 80s so well, is you probably had to spin those discs on for the public consumption a couple of times, right?
Yeah, but I was pretty much done jocking by then. My last jockin' job was during law school, and I graduated in 91. And so, the end of the 80s, the very beginning of the 90s, and after that, I'm just off the radar.
So, by the way, for those who are listening at home, that was the New Radicals, and the song is called You Get What You Give. A lot of us who are into music might be forgiven for thinking that was the band World Party. Sounds a lot like World Party, but it's not. It's the New Radicals. I think they had a few other small, like, bottom of the top 40 charts hits, but that was their biggest. And I don't know what ever happened.
So do you, depending on your players, do you ever go back further than Arnold just got it. New Radicals, You Get What You Give. Yep.
Right.
And, but do you ever go back further than the 50s?
No, not really. When we played the family game on Christmas Day, I did a special BTI round of Christmas songs that included, like, Judy Garland singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
I bawl at that one every year.
Yeah. I do all this stuff. I make the intros on GarageBand, so I chop. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll download something from YouTube and then I'll chop it where I need to chop it. And I got a really nice little take of Little Drummer Boy, Peace on Earth, with David Bowie and Bing Crosby, and that was part of our Christmas one too. But no, not a lot of stuff from the 50s. And you know, and this is if you were to do this at home and play the game at home or to try it for yourselves. You have to have somebody like myself be the quiz master, right? Who prepares the stuff, prepares the intros, puts them together on a list, you know, and it's like a game show host. And you have to really, tailor the game to the players involved. Like, it helps if I know ahead of time the age ranges. When we played on Christmas with all these family members, we had my kids who were in their early 20s, and we had a couple of cousins and nieces who were also in their 20s to 30s. So it wouldn't be fair for me to put in all 70s and 80s, you know, just so the old farts like me can you know, pretend to rule over our kids. So, you know, I did put not only
get off
90s,
my lawn.
But,
yeah.
You know, I did put in 2000 from, you know, stuff from the new current millennium in there. And yeah, and you'd watch the people with gray hair just sort of scratch their temples a lot of times. You know, I put in, you know, Kendrick or Lizzo or you know, whatever. You know, there are definitely recognizable pop hits from the last 20 years if you pay kind of attention to pop culture.
Well, and how's this for irony to wrap the program? Lee in New York just told me New Radical are reuniting after 22 years for the Biden inauguration.
You know what? I just read that today and that slipped my mind. Yes, you beat me to it. You beat me. Yeah, they are reuniting. I think that's going to be a hell of an inaugural thing, right? I heard like Springsteen's going to be there, and who else is playing the inaugural? I think J Lo.
Garth Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to hit all the quadrants and all the different demographics, as well they should, you know. Let's have a show that looks and sounds like America.
And so, that's why, you know, that's one of the more exciting things is that they are, you know, the trans community went absolutely wild when Joe Biden just mentioned us.
Hmm.
That was validating and affirming and beautiful. I have a question for you to wrap things up. I have a question for you from Darlene in Connecticut.
Oh, Darlene, you're always there.
And
like a good neighbor, Darlene is there.
Why is it that some actors become critical of the shows and movie roles they played on in the past, like Tina Louise did of Gilligan's Island and a number of actors that were in the Star Wars movies like,
Harrison Ford was famously critical of George Lucas. And I think recently in the newer ones.
Alec Guinness. Specifically referenced Alec Guinness playing Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right.
Darlene asks, is that wise to do in terms of one's acting career?
It is not wise at all. For a young actor, somebody who's still trying to establish themselves as an A-lister, it could be career suicide. And, you know, it doesn't happen, I think, as much as, well, it's an interesting thing, you know, because of social media, because of the accessibility of actors and stars, there are more opportunities than ever for public figures to say stupid things or things that would be counterproductive to, you know, the projects they've been working on. So if I were a young actor, I'm sure, and I were in a big movie, let's say a Marvel movie or something, it would be career suicide of me to badmouth it. Because part of your job as an actor is not just to be in the thing and say the lines and don't bump into the furniture, but your job is really also to provide publicity, to get the fannies in the seats, as they say. So if you're going around saying that something sucks, or that, you know, you disagree with it politically and all this stuff. Well, first of all, the impulse is why'd you do it? You know, why'd you take the money and run? And that could be the case with, you know, Alec Guinness. You know, I think Alec Guinness was a case of not having any fucks to give. He's like, I'm Alec Guinness. Yeah, I took the money and I'm going to badmouth Star Wars. You know, I'm going to say it's for children and imbeciles, because what are you going to do? You know, they already killed Obi-Wan anyway. Supposedly, Harrison Ford had begged for Han to be killed off at the end of Empire Strikes Back, and that's why they put him in carbonite for this indeterminate future, because they weren't sure if they could get him back for the third one. So it could be, you know, the beginning of Return of the Jedi could have been, well, too bad, Han's dead, what do we do now? But instead, they gave him a lot more money, I'm sure they did a lot of things to make him happy, and he did come back. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, there are more publicity people, more agents, more managers than ever, because it's all about messaging. It's all handling the message, Darlene. And so, you know, a real professional knows to say the right things when they go out on tour or do press junkets or on a talk show. You know, that's the thing, too. You watch somebody like you know, somebody come on a movie, you know, to promote a movie that everybody is already saying it's bad. Like, you know, Taylor Swift promoting Cats had to go out there every night while the movie was still in theaters and be like, oh, it was marvelous and we had a great time and you should go see it. And even knew she knew it was a stinker, but she was a good soldier.
Yeah, she was a trooper.
And especially for something that's an ongoing series. You know, if you were to go out there and say, well, this stinks, or even somebody like me, if I were to put a script of something that I thought was moronic that I'm working on the internet, or if I'm to say, like, don't watch this show, I mean, I'm doing harm to the show, which does harm to my peers, because we want that show to succeed and go on, because that's how we pay our bills. So it's
even really, if it honestly, is Here Come the White People.
Even if it's Here Come the White People. My feeling is once you take a job, you either, you know, get in line or don't take the job. And certainly, especially with such a high profile person as an actor, I think it's spoiled brat behavior. I think that Alec Guinness said what he said because he knew he could get away with it. And, you know, look at, too, you could look at other actors, like, what's her name that was in, and I know we're bumping up against
her. Oh, we're okay.
Catherine, what's her name, who was in the movie with, I'm becoming that guy. The movie about Josh, what's his name, who gets somebody pregnant, and they wind up getting married. God. Catherine. Anyway, there's an actress that was in this big movie, and some comedy movie that your listeners are screaming at their laptops over right now. Can't believe that my supposed pop culture genius has let me down in such a big, huge, obvious way. But anyway, you know, she had come on in this movie and said later, like, well, you know, I think this is a piece of crap because it's all a boys' club, and the women are all portrayed as idiots and shrews. And it's not that she was wrong. I agree with it. I think in retrospect, you look at that. Knocked up. Seth Rogen.
Oh, Josh. Yeah.
Seth Rogen. Knocked up. And what was her name? Catherine. She was the female lead in that. You know, and you watch that movie now and you're like, Catherine Heigl.
Yeah.
You watch that movie now and you're like, you know, she's kind of right. You know, the women are all portrayed as idiots and shrews. You know, no fun, always stepping on the boys' good time sort of thing. You know, why can't he have all the guys over for smoke bongs and watch porn? You know, just because he's married and has a kid, why can't he do that? Well, because, you know, you shouldn't do that.
Because grow up.
Grow up. But on the other hand, she read the script, and she did benefit from being in that movie. She got to do other movies because she was in a big hit movie. So it's like, to me, you either take it or you don't take it. And in either way, when you publicly criticize a project you're working on, you're endangering the careers of everybody that worked with you and thought that you were their friend. So I don't espouse it. I think that once you shake hands with the devil, you're with the devil. You know, it's like with all these people with He Who Shall Not Be Named who are suddenly, you know, resigning, you know, after the Capitol thing. It's like, well, you know, where were you all along? You were benefiting. You got the tax breaks for the trillionaires. You got the judges all loaded into the federal courts. And now you've decided that He Shall Not Be Named as a terrible human being. He's been terrible since birth. And you knew it before he was elected because you're on tape saying it, but you went along. So it's like, okay, if you're going to, you know, in for a dime, in for a dollar. And it's the same way with movies and show business. If I take a job and the pay is lousy and the, you know, producers are, you know, it's like I shared
a tweet the other day from somebody named Emerson Collins, and I thought this captured it perfectly. You were talking about the, you know, people heading for the exits now after the 6th of January.
Right.
And he tweeted, "I'm fascinated by anyone for whom this was the straw. What kind of Herculean mutant camel was carrying all the others?"
Yeah, well, they got what they wanted, and plus, you know, there was no more power to be sucked from. He who shall not be named had no power, really, at that point, other than the power over white supremacists to storm the Capitol. But that wasn't, you know, that's a whole other show.
And the, probably the funniest thing to come out of that, and it's surprisingly, there were funny things that came out of January the 6th, and that's a horrible thing to say about something that took 6 human lives. But
yeah,
still,
I mean,
some of the photographs have become iconic, you know, QAnon Buffalo Hat Snowflake Man.
Yeah.
Standing next to the guy who was there on probation, and the other guy next to him, and it just said, "Name this band, Wrong Answers Only."
Oh yeah, that one.
The Never Had Sex Pistols. Rage Against the Voting Machines. And the one that really slayed me was the Pillage People.
Yeah, yeah, all good.
But it.
Let's. Yeah. Sorry.
So, yeah, I guess we'll wrap up. It has been a delight, Dan.
Let's end on that.
It always is a delight. I had a question for you about Gwyneth Paltrow to see if you'd ever worked with her, but no, we'll leave.
I don't think I ever have. I maybe when she was maybe before she was huge, I did this one movie. I don't know. She was in a movie that my sister did a song for that wound up not in the movie, but on the soundtrack that went gold. So somewhere, you know, my sister has a gold album in her house with Gwyneth Paltrow's face on the album cover above the gold record. So there's that.
Well, I'll go ahead, because what it boils down to is, you remember the big nothing burger, the big non-troversy last year when she decided at $75 a pop to get people on Goop to purchase her My Vagina candle?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the story that will not go away, because a woman in England apparently won one. I think it was England. She won.
It's a candle? I thought it was like a steamer. I thought it was a vag steamer.
No, she sold those too. But no, she also sold jade vagina eggs too. None of which should ever be put anywhere in any human orifice. But so it was called,
you know,
the.
Now that you're transgender, there's all kinds of places I could go with this, and I'm
oh,
not
believe
go
me,
to any of them.
Believe me, there's.
I ain't going there.
I'm keeping myself Missy. Away from there. I'm trying to learn to have some damn decorum this late in life. But it was the "This Smells Like My Vagina" candle, and a woman won one.
Uh-huh.
A woman in the UK won one in some sort of a quiz. And, well, you know, you've won Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina candle. Naturally, you're going to light it.
I guess so, yeah.
And that's when Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina candle exploded all over the house.
Oh, my God.
The candle exploded and emitted huge flames with bits flying everywhere. Jody Thompson, aged 50, told The Sun, "I've never seen anything like it. The whole thing was ablaze, and it was too
explode.
The whole thing was ablaze, and it was too hot to touch. There was an inferno in the room."
You know, I've lit my share of candles in the day. I've never had one explode on me.
I got one burning here right now.
I don't live in a Looney Tunes cartoon. I don't know how this occurs.
Me either.
Was it red? Was it like fire engine red? It did have a suspiciously long fuse. Was the word acme on the, you know, on the bottom of it? These are the telltale signs, folks.
Acme.
But
it could have burned the place down. It was scary at the time, but it's funny looking back that Gwyneth's vagina candle exploded in my living room.
And it made your whole house probably smell like a vagina for, you know.
Well, no, for the curious, it's actually, the scent notes include geranium, citrusy bergamot, and cedar absolutes juxtaposed with damask rose and ambrette seed, according to the online store.
Well, if that's what you think your vagina smells like, who am I to tell you that it does not? I ain't going to mansplain the aroma of anyone's.
Yeah. I just find the idea that story will not go away. And
well, I'm glad it didn't go away, because I had not heard it until now. And I'm incredulous on many different fronts, including just pure basic physics. Really, maybe that's the thing that gets me most of all. Why did it explode? I mean, and I've heard it. Listen, I've heard of the Colonel Sanders Kentucky Fried Chicken candle, but this is... Yeah, I didn't know about the Goop vagina candle. I knew about the vag steamer. I knew about some other vagina related products. And you know, God bless you. You want to buy them, you want to sell them. If they've let the market decide, I'm all for that, I guess. Don't hurt anybody. Stick a neck up there if you want. Maybe it's a good thing. What do I know?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? But
I mean, I rely,
for many, many things in my life, especially now, I rely on Agnes. And she said,
"There you go.
Nope, that's crazy. That's just crazy.
You know, if it feels good, do it. If it makes you happy."
No, it even went so far as to, "Well, honey, one of these days, if you do get one of those, I catch you sticking a jade egg up there, we are going to have a problem."
You see, you can say that kind of stuff. I can't go there just yet. It's like I can't tell Teamster jokes. I can't certain things in the transgender community, I'm going to have to cede the floor to Ms. Kincaid.
Well, I mean, and there are just so many things I'm learning, and it's all just wild and wonderful and exciting and somewhat terrifying. And
hey, it's better than being bored, right?
Right. You know, it beats sniffing burlap. I mean, you know, you buy your all ticket, right. You take the ride.
All right. Well, you know what? I should go too, because I have to get up tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
You have a job.
I have a job. Yeah. This unlike you, this is not my job. Nobody pays me for this.
Oh, and thank you. And thank you to Will in Chicago. We are down to 170, so that's wonderful. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Will. And folks, don't forget that Robin Kincaid needs some nice teeth. Robin Kincaid deserves nice teeth. Give Robin money. Promote the GoFundMe. Do what you can. Because the sooner Robin gets these teeth taken care of, the sooner that, you know, she'll be able to be back on the air and say all the fine, wise things in Greek and English and all of that most of us have no clue of. And I'll always come back. As long as Robin's here, I'll keep coming back.
Oh, and I want you to. I think tonight was – I really do. I want to –
tonight was an odd conversation, but I don't mind it.
No,
I
mean,
it went all over the damn place.
Yeah, it had its own buzz. Yeah. But I want, with your cooperation, you know, I think it would be fun to pull together a Horn BTI if you would be willing to be the quizmaster.
Oh, most definitely. All it takes is Zoom and a bunch of email addresses, you know, that I can send out the Zoom invitation. And I'll definitely be the quiz master. It's good between 4 to 6 people per team. So 8 to 12 participants is the good number for that. So if you, Robin, can pull that together, maybe Agnes wants to be one of the players or Ferg or any of the community, the listeners, I would gladly do it. And you know what? Then we can make it a fundraiser for either the teeth or the show or both. I really want you to have everything you can get in this world. Because I do think the world of you. So maybe we turn it into a fundraiser of some sort.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Well, enjoy your day. Have a wonderful day at work, Dan.
Thanks.
And I look forward to when you can, like, help promote it, and we'll find out what it is you've been working on.
Yeah.
And it's all just going to be, I think, and, you know, above all, you know, the standard disclaimers apply. Stay safe, my friend. Please stay safe.
I'm trying, buddy. I am trying so much. You too, though. Stay safe.
And give our best to Gus and Phoebe and
Phoebe Fisher,
and
who's going to law school. One last shout out.
Oh yeah.
Phoebe Fisher got accepted into George Washington University with a complete free ride scholarship. She will be going to law school next year, in the fall semester. And my God, my buttons are busting over that one.
Oh, you've got a right to be proud. But just remember, it's okay if she changes her mind and decides to, you know, go for, you know, a respectable occupation.
Like joining the circus?
Piano player in a whorehouse. I mean, you know, anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's an old line out there that and I've heard it ascribed to various people. And this is what happens. We try to end the program and we just can't stop.
It's like being at the front door at the end of the night.
Yes.
And you can't just quite get to the car. You gotta chit chat, and the kids are in the car. The kids are honking. Come on! What are you talking about?
Let's go. I'm hungry.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I'm bored.
So I'll save that anecdote for another day. Please give our congratulations to Phoebe. All kidding aside, that's quite an accomplishment. And George Washington University's law school is no slouch, and that's going to be a road that runs straight into all those D.C. law schools run straight into government.
That's right. Well, it's public interest law is what she thinks her field is going to be. She wants to do good. Both of my kids.
That's the white hat. You're never going to get rich being a lawyer stuff.
My kids want to change the world. They don't care about yachts. They just want what's right to happen, finally. You know?
And that means you and Helene did a fantastic job.
Why, thank you. That's the finest compliment you can give. And listen, you keep telling me to be safe. I say to you, congratulations. You know, I've said we've talked about this off the air, but congratulations for this very brave and wonderful decision you've made in your life. And thank you, Agnes, for being so supportive.
Oh,
and
here,
so,
here.
You know, being the woman behind the woman now. And it's remarkable. And I'm happy for you both. And that's all I want. I want you to be happy.
Thank you, Dan.
Whatever I can do to make you happier, I'm going to do it.
Well, there's a reason. There's a reason that you've been a dear friend for as long as you've been a dear friend. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Good night, everybody.
Dan Fisher, dear friend. How about that? Yes.
I'm a friend of the deer.
DF.
Later.
Later. Bye now. And so that brings us to the end of the program. That was a lot of fun. And maybe we'll figure out a way. I think that would be great, a Horn BTI game, maybe over the weekend sometime. That'd be a lot of fun. As Randy Radar says, Robin deserves teeth that don't have bugs implanted in them. Yeah, and I don't want to be getting any secret messages from Q through the new choppers or anything. So let's avoid that. Thank you. And so that's it. That's the program this evening. More in Monday, and we had plenty of more ends, and then we sort of relaxed a little bit as we count the hours, the minute, the days, the hours, the minutes, and some of us even the second, until that misanthropic orange nightmare is no longer part of our day-to-day lives. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our subscribers via PayPal and Patreon and a la carte contributors. You are all an intimate part of why this program continues to exist. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky earlier in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at headon.live, the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. I am working on the scripting for the new intro. So many little things yet. I just realized I've got to change my avatar and my name in the chat room. There's a lot goes into this. Thank you, Ben Birch. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Please continue to heal and feel better. I know how annoying it is. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Just like I told Dan, please stay safe. Best way to stay safe is to stay home, but we can't all just stay home. So when you go out, take every possible precaution. If they start selling full body condoms, let me know. I'd like to buy one. But for now, wash your hands, wear your mask, don't touch your face. Use hand sanitizer liberally. Maintain your social distance 15 feet between masked people and people without masks you just don't want to be in the same zip code with. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes up to you saying, well, fame or infamy, it's all the same to me. More people are going to know my name. Avoid that person like the plague, because she is. Later, y'all.